It's time for Twit. Dan Patterson is here. Jill Duffy from PC Magazine. Our own Alex Lindsay. We're talking about the week's tech news. By the way, I don't mention it any time in the show, but this is the 9th anniversary of the Twit Network. We begin our 10th year today. We'll also talk about those wearable devices. Is it the end of the line for the Fuel Band? Project Ara, the phone you put together, and True Blood. It's actually real. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 454, recorded April 20th, 2014, Kansas City, Oklahoma. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Jira, an Atlassian product. Jira is the project management solution for teams planning, building, and launching great products. To learn more about Jira and try it free for 30 days, visit Atlassian.com/twit. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID Audible_com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. This is TWIT. Welcome, everybody, to the weekly show that covers the week's tech news. And we have a great panel today to talk about everything going on. We dragged Alex Lindsay in, and he's going to explain in a bit what he's going to do that's a little different for this week's TWIT. Alex, usually the co-host on MacBreak Weekly and, of course, the man about town with the Pixel Core. On air via Skype from New York City, Dan Patterson. I think you're in New York, right, Dan?
Yep, New York City.
Dan Patterson, he's a broadcast digital journalist. He just got back from teaching Sudanese media makers how to use Android phones to change the world. He was in Cairo for the month of March with the group Small World News. I think that's really exciting. We were talking before the show about that, and we'll talk some more about it. But it's great to have you, Dan. Welcome.
Wonderful to be here.
And I want to welcome into studio with us Jill Duffy. Jill writes for PC Magazine. Has been around a little bit for TNT. And we persuaded her to spend her Easter Sunday with us. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you for having me once
it's
again.
It's wonderful to have you. Not your first time on Twit, so.
No, but first time live
in studio. It's a little different.
The madness.
It's a little different. My head, don't stare at it. It is abnormally large. So what are we going to do with questions today? This is a little different.
Okay, so we have been, for a couple of years, we've been building question engines. A lot of when we do live shows, we want to find ways that users can interact with us on the air. And so we've been experimenting with this. This is our newest version, version 3. So what you can do here is go to Bitly. That's B-I-T.
If you're watching live, there's no point in doing this. If you're listening after the fact,
it's over. So, but this is the reason to watch live,
right?
So you can go to Bitly. That's bit.ly/twit454. And I may have gotten that number wrong. No, I got that number right.
Yep.
So twit454. So it's bit.ly/twit454. And this is a question system. And what you can do here is you can watch the show, so you don't have to put this on a separate window. There is a login. Don't worry about it.
So instead of using chat, for the time being, if you wanted to, you could use this. It won't be as interactive as chat, but we will see the questions.
We'll see the questions, and you can vote them up. I can see them right here. I can give you the login if you want to see them there.
I'll let you be the question.
You can just come over to me, and we can answer some questions.
So, Alex, you're the one who has the answering power at this point?
At this moment, I can give it to you, too, if you'd like. You can jump in there.
Like
yeah, okay.
Give her the link.
We'll get you again. You linked. Okay, so I'll send you a link and a login for that. So
you could just put it in the chat on the Google Drive document.
Just let me know what you register as. Put it next to your thing here, and then I'll. But no, I just have my programmer who's watching from London right now add you as an admin.
And your idea is that you might use this for Hangouts and stuff when you do events. You're doing it right now personally. Ask Alan.
Yeah, I've been doing these kind of flash ones where I give everyone like 10 minutes warning. And I say, if you want to just ask questions about Rwanda or media or green screen, you know, you just jump on. And it's funny, we get about 20 people and they ask questions. Nice. It's a great little conversation. And so it's an app that, you know, you can get up there, you can ask questions, you can also vote on the questions up and down. We can answer them. So you'll see us experimenting. I can answer them offline in text, or we can answer them on the air. So and we can also timestamp them, which isn't useful now, but will be useful in the future of when we answer them. So anyway, there's a lot of little bits and pieces that we're working on, and it's just designed to keep the online audience more engaged, you know, and have you actually have it, you know, sometimes with the IRC, everything's just going past, and if, you know, we don't know how popular
it's
that,
just an experiment.
Is.
My, you know, I'm always looking for ways to make it more interactive because, yep, I mean, one of the reasons we do stuff live is so that people can watch live and interact with us live.
Exactly.
But we don't, you know, we've tried a lot of things, some of which don't work so well.
And we're going to find
like
out.
Like we
this
tried
works.
A Google Hangout, and that kind of was hard because we had 9 people and we couldn't get them all in and stuff.
Right.
But this is an interesting. We'll try it. We'll see what happens.
See if it looks good. So
yeah. So if you want to participate and you're watching the live show.
For instance, the most popular question right now is, when is Chad getting a raise?
Actually, there's a typo. So it says, when I Chad,
when
get,
I Chad get raise.
When I Chad get raise. When? When I
Oddly
Chad.
Oddly enough, it was posted by OMG
weird.
Chad.
Who would have posted that question? Huh.
But
suspicious.
But Chad, even though you obviously put it in there, it's been voted up by 38 people.
Yeah. 39 people.
You got some people 39. On your side here, Chad.
Yeah, apparently.
Hey, this is not going to work, and I'm going to turn it off. Can you give Chad, the one problem is Chad's watching the link that has the feed in it. You give Chad the moderation
Yeah, so
console.
Chad, just send me your
username.
Your username, and I can get you upgraded to admin.
And we could just do that in the Google Doc.
Yeah.
So I think this is a top story. You know why? Because I see a lot of people around here wearing these fitness bands, including mm-hmm. you, Jill Duffy. Mm-hmm. Where you wear a Fitbit, what's it called?
I wear everything.
Force.
I wear a Fitbit Force yeah. often. I also love the Basis band, the Basis Carbon
yeah.
Steel.
Yeah, they just got sold.
Yeah, they were bought by...
Somebody big. Was it Yahoo, Google, somebody,
no.
Basis?
I almost want to say Intel. I don't think
Intel. I think it was Intel. Yeah. Congratulations. Ding, ding, ding. You're absolutely right. It was Intel.
Yeah. No, and that's great for the company. I mean, it's a wonderful product. It really came out first in the sense of having a heart rate monitor that you didn't have to wear around your chest. So you could have this heart rate monitor
right.
on your wrist. It would count your steps. It does really cool stuff, too, if you bicycle, which I do. So if
yeah,
you bicycle...
The Force doesn't know you're bicycling.
No. But
it thinks you're not exercising.
It doesn't really count anything.
I used to put it around my ankle.
The Basis, though, when you start to bicycle, it knows your wrist position and the amount of speed you're moving, and it's like, okay, now you're
that's
bicycling.
That's better.
And same yeah. with running. Once you start to run, it automatically records that you're running. And a lot of other devices that have that capability, you have to, like, enable it. This one just does it automatically. It also does your skin temperature. So between the heart rate, the skin temperature, and the movement, it can tell when you're in REM sleep versus light sleep versus deep sleep.
So you just keep it on all the time.
Yeah, you just leave it on all the time. It's the
Is that your favorite?
Carbon Steel Edition. Yeah, it
is. It kind of looks like a watch, too.
It does. It has a wonderful display on it. It's $199, so it's more expensive than a lot of the other fitness trackers out there. But that's by far my favorite one.
Dan, you sound like you bought into this too.
I mean, it's been said before, but it's worth saying again. The wearables market is kind of waiting for its iPod. But having said that, you know, the Fitbit has really helped me do exactly what the kind of the silly hyperbole would lead you to believe, which is to bend your data curve in a positive direction, right? Simply having access to this data. You know, I did the same thing when I quit smoking. I just made a spreadsheet, and having access to this data helps you understand what you're doing. It helps you identify positive trends in your own usage. So,
which
you know, wearing a Fitbit.
Have, Dan? Which Fitbit
I'm sorry?
Do you have? Which model of the Fitbit?
I have the, what is this? The belt wearable one. What is this
the
model?
Fitbit One.
Fitbit One.
Yeah.
And it's
super accurate.
You know, it's fantastic. The only danger, of course, is that it's waiting to be thrown into the laundry. But it is really, in the last year or so that I've been using it, I've really bent my data curve in a positive direction. I get a ton more exercise and, you know, I see the beautiful city.
I have lost every one of these. Several times.
I killed my Nike Fuel Band by accident.
Well, that's where the story begins because according to CNET, and they published this 2 days ago on Friday, Nike fired the majority of the fuel band team and will stop making wearable hardware. Now, Nike has responded saying, no, absolutely not. They told Recode, the Nike Fuel Band SE remains an important part of our business. We will continue to improve the Nike Plus Fuel Band app, launch the new Metalux colors, and we will sell and support the Nike Plus Fuel Band SE for the foreseeable future. Nevertheless, I think it's pretty clear that did lay off a lot of people. And what it made me wonder is, are we about to see the big shakeout in this area? Wow. I thought the Fuel Band was the best device out there.
I totally disagree. You don't? I really do.
What's
I really
wrong
don't.
With it?
So when
it
I
told
met,
you what time it was.
It did. In a hard bangle that wasn't going to bend or move at all. I found it uncomfortable.
Well, you have smaller wrists than I do. It fit me
wrists.
Well.
I have pretty big wrists.
All right.
But, you know, for $150, which is what the Fuel Band SE costs, you don't really get a whole lot of data. So a lot of these other trackers will tell you your steps, your mileage, your heart rate, all this other stuff. And Nike tried to do this thing called fuel points.
Right.
The problem with it, I met
with Nike. It wasn't real numbers.
I talked to them. Yeah, they were like, You know how Weight Watchers started Weight Watchers
right.
points? I was like, because nobody knew what calories were at
right.
that point. But we know what steps are. We know what miles are. We know what calories are now. You can't invent a new standard and hope that other people will.
My question was that related to FDA issues, though? Like telling you exactly how many calories. So it wasn't.
No. Okay. So, yeah, there is a fine line between what is something that needs to be FDA approved because it's considered a medical device. Mm-hmm. And it has to give you a diagnosis.
Okay.
I think the mistake it seems like a mistake that Nike may have made is overlooking the importance of data in your fitness tracker. Yes, these are neat little gadgets that we can wear, but really the heart and soul of this is access to data and having that standard. We know what steps walked are, we know what miles are, we know what calories are, and that is what I really care about is access to the data and how that can be. You know, the value proposition is how this data can make my life better. It is not having a gadget that is flashy, but isn't standard and doesn't work in a way that I would expect it to work.
Yeah. I mean, I focus a lot on the software side, the app side, the usability
right.
of, because exactly what you're saying, Dan, is that if you don't understand all the data it's collecting, then there's no point in having that data.
Right.
Okay, so I bought the Basis while you were talking.
I need another
thing to lose. But it shares with everything else kind of this clunky, ugly form factor. And I'm real thrilled to see that I can order even more ugly straps. So that, I think, is part of the problem is that while I see every geek I know wearing one of these, or maybe less so now, but for a while everybody had a Jawbone Up. Mm-hmm. Then they had a recall.
Sure.
And then they had the Fitbit. And blah, blah, blah. But I think that even the geeks are not wearing them as much anymore. And I don't think I've ever seen a normal person wear them.
But I wore my Nike Fuel Band pretty religiously until it broke. And then I was like, and then it was out of stock.
Nobody buys another one.
And then I dropped out. You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They had, and I guess the question is, of course, it's surprising that not all the smartwatches are just incorporating this into it.
They're going to.
They're going to, though. I mean, I think that's what's obviously we've seen Apple's meetings heard about them at the FDA. I mean, they're definitely thinking about it.
Yeah. And I had a chance to really test the Samsung Gear Fit. I thought it was.
What did you think of that?
Well, so.
That's the pretty one. Mm-hmm. It's curved.
Yeah, it's curved. It has this sort of rectangular shaped display. And the display itself is beautiful. The functions as a smartwatch are pretty good. So you get notifications from your Android. You can. Quickly text somebody back with like a canned response that are all saved in there. But if you're actually using it as a fitness tracker, it was not ideal because that touch screen on it was so sensitive that I found like if I'm moving around and I go to touch it, I had to like stop what I was doing. Sort of like the biathlon. You have to slow your heart rate and like right. get your motor skills back. So I found for that, it just didn't really have an active person in mind.
Yeah. And you're an active person.
I'm a pretty active person.
See, it'd be perfect for me because I don't.
Now, do you want that to be voice activated? Would that make it easier?
Well, now we're starting to get into the idea of like the true one wearable device. And I think, I mean, there's so much that I want to see out of that we're not quite there yet. I want to interact with it, not really by voice, but I want to interact with it through passive gestures. So there's some experimental pieces on the market that are coming to market soon anyway. One I saw at CES that I really loved was called Kiwi Move. It looks like nothing. It looks like a little chip a little box that you can wear on your lapel, you can put it in your pocket, but you can teach it to learn from your passive gestures. So, for example, every time I lean down to tie my shoes, activate my running sensors. Every time, so if you have a connected home, you have your doorway set up. Every time I leave the door, you know, lock my house.
How do you teach it? Does it say, I notice you bend over a lot? What are you up to?
Well, so the guys who are making it have an app. It's not out yet. I'm on their early list. So I think it's going to be coming out in like July or August. You would train it with this app. So you can do active gestures too. And the one that they would show at CES was when I draw a music note in the air, that means launch Shazam, find out what song is playing, and then offer for me to buy it through my store of choice.
That's a little weird gesture, but I guess you could have other gestures.
But it's neat because other people can't mimic your gestures.
Right.
Because there's very specific things that humans do. It's a wonderful pairing of like humans and computers, I think.
Right. I mean, Chad's a big Pebble guy. I gave him my old Pebble because that's another one I got tired of.
Right. Quick.
And that's a different category. So you've got right now a big division between the health stuff, like the Fitbit Force, and then the notification stuff, the phone extension, like the Pebble. And then I guess Samsung's kind of mixing a little bit of the two in together.
Well, what's interesting is the Pebble.
Do you
also
wish you had health features in the Pebble?
Well, you can go install that from the store.
Oh, so it does do that.
It does. Yeah, it does some stuff. So, like Runkeeper is one of their most popular ones. It's basically just a pedometer, just like the other ones. It's not doing any of the cool heart rate or you know, skin temperature stuff, but it's still a pedometer. And I've one thing that I got really excited about. I haven't tested yet. Is a sleep tracker. And that's all built into the Pebble because it's just a smartwatch at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you don't get raises, by the way, Chad. I just give you my old crap.
Right. Exactly.
That's kind of like a raise.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I think the whole movement of
I didn't have to spend $100 on the Pebble.
The wearable movement in general, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I think we're going to jump over. So I always talk about Google Glass, and the problem is you're still looking at a screen. And I think that's something we need to jump over.
What would you have instead?
So, like I was talking about passive gestures, I think something
But you need a screen to read.
Right. So, eventually, you will look at your smartphone. I think the smartphone is the thing
that we're
tethered
to. You're not going to get rid of the smartphone.
Yeah.
Well, but I think when you look at Google Glass and then you look at the contacts that they're building, it seems that they're probably Google Glass is kind of an early version of something that's going to be a lot more embedded, you know, into what we're doing.
Yeah, I hope so.
You know, and I think I have have Google Glass, and it's not something I wear every day. I use it a lot for video, you know, so shooting videos and having that screen becomes super important. There's a lot of other like wearable devices that I can put on. And what I use it for a lot of times is instructions. We have a lot of technical stuff. And so I'm like, this is how you do this. And this is what and send off a little video or capture a little bit of moment. And I can't do that with anything else. I mean, like effectively.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys think that this is a fairly useful category.
I do.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if there are market projections for the size of this market, if it is only fitness-based versus if the value proposition comes from being able to do what Chad just described, which is install, just like we do with our smartphones, things that do add utility to our life. And if we can, you know, like Jill said, jump over that screen and really embrace something that adds value to our lives, then that market must be pretty massive, right?
I think you guys have an overdeveloped imagination. You're fantasizing about something that doesn't exist. You agree, right? This is kind of, well, someday this is going to be a useful category. Right now, it's a pedometer. You know, basically, it's a pedometer.
Unless it does heart rate.
It gives you, okay, maybe it's a pedometer plus heart rate. It Chad's watch says, hey, somebody's calling you. Okay, but you still have to pull out the phone. These things, they're very a very limited use, and I think that's why they're not taking the market.
But I think the convergence.
The problem is that there's the elephant in the room, which is Apple.
Right.
Like, well, is Apple going to do something, as they have done in the past, that puts this on the map? Or I think Apple doesn't have the mojo anymore, but without Steve Jobs, I don't think they can.
I mean, they have a lot of people working on it, so it's...
So presumably they
can do something.
And I think there's three categories. There's the quantified self category. There's the phone kind of adjunct category. And then and it's kind of part of quantified self, but it's the more advanced quantified self that's the health category, VO2 max or heart rate or, you know, blood pressure, that kind of thing. A medical device. So I think if you could make one device, I don't know, are you going to have one device that does all three and then also understands it when you go like this? I mean, what are we going to, is that what you're fantasizing about?
I mean, isn't that the beauty of tech is that we dream big and we think about the things that we would like to see and we would like to have and this wonderful creative future. And we get there slowly by little by little, getting people involved.
Disappointed.
Sure.
Your heart gets broken a lot. No, and I always think of my job as to be the brutal skeptic, and kind of like Dvorak, he taught me, and say, yeah, this is all nice, and I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I was very excited. I still am a little bit about the Android wearable space because we saw completely fabricated. Talk about imagination demo. For instance, this is the Moto 360. They say they will sell this summer, which is basically Google Now on a circular screen.
And I don't understand the whole circular. I mean, I felt like it's
because it looks like a watch.
I know, but I mean, we started making movies by shooting people on stage, and then we realized we didn't need to stick to that. That.
Well, I've yet to see something better because the gear fit is weird, really. Right?
It's a little awkward.
Kind of the oblong. Yeah. Curve, but not to your wrist curve. It's not flexible, right? It just it's this hard thing.
Well, the watch face, as it were, part is not flexible. The band is flexible.
The band is flexible.
Yeah.
That's why I like the Nike Fuel Band because it had a time, it had a clock. It fit my wrist.
Well, I found myself, using that a lot just by itself because it was just, it had the basic
clock.
The basic information. Yeah, so. Yeah.
Isn't there a little irony that we are now, that they've done all this stuff in an era where people have stopped wearing watches entirely? I mean, nobody in your generation wears wristwatches.
Oh, I don't think that's
really?
True.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
But is it jewelry or is it to tell the time or?
A big part of what I liked about the Force was I liked having the time on my wrist.
Okay.
I didn't want to pull out
Maybe we'll get young people wearing watches again. How about pocket watches with fobs?
No.
Yeah, that would be
good. You know, that's the other very exciting and wonderful thing about being journalists in this space is that we can dream big and aspire for cool things, but we don't have to be cheerleaders. And if and when this market collapses, then in a year or two, we have a fantastic story to keep talking about. Why did this not take off?
Well, God knows I spent a lot of time talking about it. I know that. But I also, I don't know if I want to be a cheerleader for any technology.
Right.
I mean,
like
science fiction.
We don't have to be.
I read science fiction a lot. I love the idea of pouring my brain into a machine so I never have to die. But I'm not going to wait around till that happens. All right, you've got some questions, LR.
No, just one question. Lindsay. We had one question that's very well voted and part of this. This is from Christopher John in San Diego. And he said, do you think Nike's back out of the Fuel Band has to do with them having an inside to the iWatch and working exclusively with Apple?
They might, because Jay Blonick, who was at Nike, is now an Apple employee. But I will tell you what they said on Secret. Our new source for all things.
Which, of course, Secret has to be tied into the watch. You can secretly look down. And
this was posted and not by one of my friends earlier this week. Secret is the app on iPhone that allows you to share anonymously. And it's really,
it's addicting.
I have mixed feelings about it.
Do you post anything on it?
I've posted once or twice. Mostly I just read and try to figure out which of my friends is doing that. But this one was posted this week. The douchebag execs at Nike are going to, and this came out before the story, are going to lay off a bunch of the engineering team who developed the Fuel Band and other Nike Plus stuff, mostly because the execs committed gross negligence, wasted tons of money, and didn't know what they were doing.
Ooh. Bitter.
Ouch.
Ouch. And I have to say, because this came out before the story and then the story came out, I have to think maybe this is somebody on the inside who has a little information about it. A lot of times on Secret, there's stuff that's just like it's made up.
Right.
And I shouldn't really even be quoting Secret at this point. That's pretty lame.
That's it. It's a new level of
first. It'll be a first
journalism.
Time.
Yeah, exactly.
But it might lead. Sources. Might speak something to the problem. It's not. It's an internal problem. It's a Nike problem. It's a management problem rather than a problem with the category.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I bring it up.
I definitely don't think it's a problem with the category. I think the category just needs to find its...
Sounds like you guys agree on
iPod.
It. Yeah. It's like the iPod. Yeah. There hasn't been an iPhone.
Phones were horrible until the iPhone.
Yeah.
You know?
Can Apple do it again with the Magic Touch?
I think we're going to find out this year if they can do it. I don't know if they can or not, but I think that this year is going to be the year to figure it out.
They're saying I should get a Flava Flav watch that I could just...
That would be awesome.
Hang around my neck. All right. Hey, this is fun. We got a lot more to talk about. Jill Duffy is here from PC Magazine. Dan Patterson, digital journalist extraordinaire. DanPatterson.com, and Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. Alex is our question master. If you have a question, B-I-T, and you're watching live, because it won't do any good to do this later, bit.ly/twit454 will get you into the question room. You can vote up questions. I think this is a good idea.
It's kind of fun. It's working really well. We were afraid it would melt down with the number of people watching Twit, but so far it seems to be holding up. I'm answering some of the questions offline, and then people are answering them online. And by the way, for Jill and Chad, just refresh your page. You should see questions.
Did y'all get in there?
I did. It's much, moderating.
Woohoo! Atlassian is a Australian company that I really like. And it's like one of those companies that you've never heard of, but they're doing $200 million in annual sales because they help developers develop great products. And I think we see these days that the project management is so important to the success of a product, to the security of a product, to the well-developed product. Atlassian's Jira is the project management solution for teams that are planning, building, and launching great products. It is a really neat company that has kind of snuck under the wire. I want to tell you about Jira because you can try it. Forbes wrote, Atlassian is to software as Apple is to design. I like that. Atlassian, and this is a little complicated, so if you're not a software developer, this may not make a lot of sense, but if you've ever worked on a team developing software, you will probably recognize the issues. You would love to easily capture, organize, and prioritize your team's issues, tasks, features, and bugs. Give that team a simple, intuitive interface so you could collaborate in real time. You could integrate all your planning documents wherever they are, your backlog, your issues, and your code repository. They've got great Git integration. Allows you to follow your code from development all the way through delivery. They have REST API, so it's very easy to code your own tools to use with Jira. Everything from the planning doc, the files and chain sets, and the repository, all the way through to deployment. You even have notifications via email, chat, app mentions, RSS. You can monitor streams of activity, self-updating reports and dashboards. It's pretty sweet, pretty slick, pretty modern. 70% of the Fortune 100 use Atlassian Jira. NASA uses Jira. 25,000 companies use Jira. If you haven't tried it, go to Atlassian.com/twit for more information. Monthly plans start very affordably, $10 a month for up to 10 users, and it's free for 30 days if you visit Atlassian, Atlassian.com /twit. We're really thrilled to have Atlassian part of the family. And I just loved this ad. I think this is from an Australian marketing for engineers. It's, I guess, a billboard ad from Atlassian. If your wife were in labor, we would think, and it's got the bash shell prompt, git push. Okay, it's kind of geeky. just like that.
That's awesome.
You get it? No? All right. Atlassian.com/twit. Git push. That's what geeks they are. Let's see. Let's move along. I guess we've talked about watches enough. Let's a little more Google news. In fact, Heartbleed news. Most of that we were talking last week, I thought a very interesting conversation, if you missed it, with Bruce Schneier about Heartbleed. He had originally classified it 11. On a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of severity. He says, not so bad as we thought. But I guess the patching process is a little slower than we might have liked. He said most of the big sites now have patched, most of the top 10,000, almost all of them. It's the next 10,000 that are not moving fast to patch. And I'm just reading this blog post from Google on Wednesday. And it's a perfect example. Google, which knew about Heartbleed before anybody, they had a lot of advance notice. They've patched most of the big services: Search, Gmail, YouTube, Wallet, Play, Apps, App Engine, AdWords, DoubleClick, Maps, Maps Engine, Earth Analytics, Tag Manager, but Cloud SQL, Google Compute Engine, Google Search Appliance, versions of Android. I mean, there's still stuff. It's hard to do, I guess, to fix it all. So they're, you know, the message that we've been passing along is wait till the service is updated and then change your password.
Well, have you gotten any emails from companies telling you to change your password?
Lots.
I've gotten
yes.
only two.
Yep. Who have yep. you gotten emails from?
Tumblr.
Yep.
And AnyDo, which is an app that
yeah,
I
me
use.
Too. Yeah. I use
yeah.
AnyDo.
Yeah.
So Tumblr maybe have been over aggressive. They said take the day off tomorrow and change all your passwords. Mm. And there are some people saying that's a little bit over. Just because you had the problem, Tumblr doesn't mean we did. For instance, my bank, Bank of America, did not use OpenSSL, so we didn't have to worry about that. Yep.
I think this comes up every time you see one of these things, that the lesson is change your passwords.
It's not a bad idea.
Don't use ones that are connected to you personally.
Use unique passwords for all your sites, and really
whether you're using one password, we use LastPass. What we like about LastPass is that company wide, I can share passwords for specific things with everyone. I don't even have to show them what the password is. Yeah. You know, I can simply give them the login for a specific site or whatever. And then I love just using almost everything now is all hashes. You know, I just don't, you know, I don't know anything about my passwords, which makes me a little dependent. If I don't have LastPass, I'm in a little trouble. But I change them pretty often. And I think that's how most of us don't get ourselves in trouble. It's just using password or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or, you know, all the things that we think make it easier. It's hard to get used to something like 1Password or LastPass, but once you start using something like that, it becomes. I don't even know what I was like before that.
I have to say, since I've really gotten into technology, that is the thing I had no idea I was so passionate about. And once I started using a password manager, I really wanted to spread that message to the people in my life who are not technological. Because I don't think they understand what password managers really do and how simple they make it to use the web and websites in general that require a login. So if you are a tech evangelist, there we go. Go and tell everybody that you know to use a password manager and show them how easy it is, because I think people have a misconception about what it is and what it does.
Now it is important. Oh, go ahead.
Spreading the word, like you just said, may be one of the most important things to come from Heartbleed. Well, yes, there are things you can do. You can change your passwords, but really making more evangelists of normal people to say, look, change your passwords regularly. Use a password manager. This is why it makes the web easier to use and how your life will be better by simply doing these small steps. That's the best thing that can come from something like Heartbleed.
Now, the one thing I will say is that you do need to teach people a little bit about, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And, you know, like, for instance, we had to train people in our office to have it auto log off if it's not being used for a certain period of time, like LastPass. Yeah. Because now, if you leave it logged in, you walk away from a computer, and now you literally every password in your whole life is opened. So that's you do have to keep in mind that there's lots of little nuances to turning that on and off to make sure that you stay safe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You probably wouldn't want to do what this guy who reads the Washington Post did. This is from the Washington Post, The Switch blog. One of the Switch's readers posted in comments, I couldn't give a flying fig about the Heartbleed thingamajig. 2 years already, the thing's been running loose. Not a word of somebody crying over its damage. Say, does anyone really know its origin? Russian crackers, Seattle high schoolers, the NSA, Yahoo's marketing department? So he gave out his 2 passwords that he uses on all his accounts. He said, read all the email I have. Sneak into my Washington Post, New York Times, or CNN accounts. Go crazy making comments on my name. Break into my Facebook or Twitter profiles. Go ahead. I don't care. And so what happened? His account on Tumblr, WordPress, Twitter, and Facebook all appear to have been hacked almost immediately. His location on Twitter now reads Gas City, Indiana. Oops. And people have been tweeting things like, I am really stupid. I am really stupid. Okay. So maybe putting your password on a national news site, not such a good idea. Our friends over at IT Pro TV have done a how-to. I did a how-to last week, which is on our Twit Specials feed, on how to use LastPass. They've done a how-to on Heartbleed, how it is, how it works, how to fix it if you have a server that you might think is vulnerable. So I'm going to give a let me do a Bitly link to this so you can get it. Link saved a few seconds. How do I make a custom link? It's just too much trouble. You know, we have, don't we still have our own shortener somewhere?
Somewhere. buried in the basement of our website, there lives a shortener that should work.
Let's see if this works. Never mind. Forget I mentioned it.
Google how to hard bleed.
It's on Vimeo. How to dash. Yeah, IT Pro TV. Tim Broom did it. He's going to just start doing some more helps and how-tos for us because we want to do more of that. Thank you, Tim, for doing that. And don't, folks, give out your password. I was just looking. You asked the question, Jill, and I think it's a good question. Did I get a lot of emails? And I thought I did. I felt like I did, but you're right. It was Tumblr, and it was a handful of them. Dan, you acted like you got a bunch of them, too. Did you?
Yeah, especially from, actually, Heroku, which I just saw up there. Yeah, a ton, and, you know, I try to be in the best practice or use best practices with passwords, and I've been using 1Password for years. Yeah, most of the sites that I use offer two-factor authentication and, you know, regular prompts to change passwords.
As far as we know, two-factor authentication was not affected, although I read an article the other day that implied that some people had had some issues with that. But
stealing the session token
right. Could
lend a vulnerability. But that's not really the two-factor. That's the session token.
Right. It's only good for a limited amount of time. The real issue is if you're using two-factor and your password's been compromised, you're really only using one factor. So it would be a good idea to change your password still. Then it would go back to two factors. If a bad guy knows one of them, then you need both of them. Google Gmail blog. Actually, let me mention this real quickly. I can't remember. We didn't mention this last week, did we? I think we mentioned it on Twig that Google had changed its terms of service and privacy terms of service to admit, we're scanning your email. Like anybody didn't know that.
Yeah.
But apparently it wasn't explicitly in the terms of service. So they have updated their terms of service on Monday. I guess we didn't talk about it because it was this past Monday. Saying that, your incoming and outgoing emails are automatically analyzed by software to create targeted ads. This, we think, is in response to the various lawsuits against Google doing this. They're being sued by a number of different groups.
And Google has always said...
Pardon me?
Is it mostly outside the U.S. No,
you know, there's two big lawsuits in the U.S., class action suits. Google's argued users implicitly consented to the activity because they don't hide the fact that it's part of the process. But now they're being a little bit more clear about their doing it. Are you surprised by this?
No, it's a search company that's providing email.
Right?
I mean, I don't, I guess I
kind of thought they might be doing that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
When Gmail rolled out that tabbed feature, did you keep it or did you get rid of it?
I kept it. I love it.
I
immediately got rid of it.
You're an organizational expert. And you got rid of it.
I couldn't stand it. I was
you had your own organization.
Why would I give them an opportunity to start giving me more ads, more promotions, more newsletters?
Well, but it's all under a promotion tab.
Yeah, I didn't want them.
Then look what they do with the promotion tab now.
That they gave me
they make it like Pinterest, see? If you had your promotional tab, now all the promotional ads would look like Pinterest.
If it looks good, I'll keep it.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's a tab, so you don't have to look at it at all. It's just like, I'm never going to go there.
No,
now all my social stuff is in one tab. When I request a password update, it always goes to update, so I can always find it. Oh, look, my order confirmation for my new Basis wristwatch.
You know, I've been using filters and labels obsessively within Gmail for years, and that actually made that four tabs across the top very, very useful because if, you know, you set this, just get in the habit of doing this and training Gmail for, say, a month. Just say, I'm going to label and filter everything for a month. And then all of a sudden, I only see the email that is important to me, and I only get what I care about. Those other tabs really help filter away the noise, especially during the day. And, you know, it's a little bit of sweat going into it, but, you know, a month or so of training Gmail, and all of a sudden you'd be, I live at inbox zero. It's wonderful. Yeah.
You know what I do is I set up my theory about this a while ago. So I use three different email, well, I probably have like five different email programs, but I use three mainly. One is for my personal mail, one is for all of the shopping that I do, and one is for,
wait a minute,
like junk sign up.
Oh, I get it.
What happens is instead of having a tab, I have an entire other account that I'm not tempted to even log into unless I have time or unless I want something there.
Right.
So I compartmentalize, but I just do it in a very, very different way.
A tab does the same thing. You just don't have, do you feel like because it's sitting there, you're going to look at it?
Yeah. And especially like anything that has a badge count on it gives me anxiety. Like I need to clear that badge count.
There's 300 new promotions.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you're an See, that's the thing. I think somebody who's an organizational expert is less likely to like the automated kind of one-size-fits-all organization that Google imposes. But I'm not an organizational expert. I suck. So I'm very happy that Google gave me any tools at all.
They
because
did it for you.
See, and I have, and for me, I have 50 or 60 folders with a couple hundred rules.
Yeah, you're
and
like, so it's all folders.
It's all, so I don't have like inbox zero. I have inbox 26,000 because if it didn't get, if inbox
32,815.
It means that's like the, refuse of what didn't get into the folders, which is all the important stuff, you know? And so I go through inbox every day, you know, kind of wander through it to see if I miss anything. And I occasionally do, but there's a lot of, you know, but I literally get 400 actionable emails a day. I can't, I mean, I just get through as much as I can.
Email's so broken, it's unusable, right?
I thought that when my kids had moved away from email and they really just expect text, I thought, I don't know how anyone could live that way. And now I find myself forcing my company more and more to, like, if you want to contact me, text me.
Can I put a question in there? Question. Is email screwed up and unusable? Yes or no? That should be in our question. Because it just seems like, and unfortunately, you cannot abandon it. That's the only way, you know, I buy a watch and I want to know where, how else they're going to get a hold of me, right?
There's a lot of companies who are trying this new push now to get rid of internal email by a certain date. I think that's great. I think if you can foster communication among your employees in-house, get them to talk to one another, get them to use something like, you know, maybe an instant messenger system or Asana, which is kind of like a project management tool, some other way where they can have a clear idea of what they're doing day to day, who's responsible for it, you know, all these things that email doesn't really give you, and then you save email for external communication only. I think that's great.
Last week, the internet went crazy because Gawker published a story saying that France had banned email after 6 p.m., that companies could not require employees to read their email after 6 p.m., and it turned out not to be true. It's much more complicated than that, but I think everybody wanted it to be true and thought, well, some people thought, oh, that's France again, and again. But most people thought, what a good idea. Can we do that here?
Yeah, I didn't think that, but I definitely, I have to admit, last week was a pretty heavy production schedule for me, and I was in Coachella and everything, you know, shooting, and didn't check email for 3 or 4 days, and I realized how calm I was, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I should do this more often.
The deal cited by The Guardian is not a formal law. It did not affect a million employees. It doesn't even specify a specific time. But two groups of employers last week signed an agreement with French unions outlining certain workers' obligation to disconnect. The obligation to disconnect applied to a smaller group of workers, flexible hour workers that could work more than 35, the mandated 35-hour work week or 10-hour-a-day limit, what we call exempt workers in the U.S. And it's basically acknowledgement that because they're always on the clock, they have a minimum daily rest period of 11 hours, which is to say they can work legally no more than 13 hours a day. So, but after that time,
so that's our minimum.
No, right.
That's where we start. You know. I mean, we sometimes give you Sunday off,
but also underlines it. Another problem with email, which is you're always, and the smartphone and text, you're always connected. You're always working. Yeah. Even if you're a 9-to-5 employee, there's nothing to stop the boss from texting you at 5 a.m. saying, hey, Smithers, pick up a paper on your way in.
But I think in a lot of ways, technology is putting us in a position where we have to make lots of choices, whether it's choose what we eat, choose whether we're going to pick up the phone, choose whether to pick up our email, choose whether, you know, we have to choose. It's no longer that it just isn't available. It is, we have to make choices about what those limits are.
Well, and I'm sure Dan will remind us that there are certain job functions where you're never off. Like if you're reporting from the field, if you're reporting abroad, that's your job, is to be on all the time.
You chose it.
Well, and it becomes global. Like when I'm in Rwanda, you know, I get up and I finish the emails that at 6 o'clock in the morning until 7:30. I'd get all the emails I missed. Then I'm at school until, you know, 8 o'clock at night, and then from 8 to midnight I'm on in meetings with people in the U.S. and then I start it over again. And so those are the hardest weeks, you know. But we're becoming much more global, you know, where you really just have to decide when you're going to turn off, because there's not going to be any turn off otherwise.
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea, that whether you love or hate technology or somewhere in that gulf in between, that you have no choice but to have technology as a part of your life. So the degree to which you want to interact with it, you cannot just be passive and say, oh, this washes over me. I don't want to, you know, watch TV, or I don't want to listen to the radio. It's not like that. It's not, you must make a decision. It's not something that is passive in our lives. And you know, if you hate technology, then making that decision probably increases your resentment of technology.
You two are from New York, the people here to my right. Google, I think the tech scene in New York is starting to pick up a little bit.
Oh, massively. Great.
It's like a big startup scene, right?
Yeah.
Google's just announced that it's going to hire, it's going to have launching a search for space for 3,000 more employees. They're looking at leasing as much as 600,000 square feet in Manhattan.
They already have a beautiful office.
They do. It's amazing.
I've seen the pictures.
It's great office.
Wonderful.
It's got like slides and stuff, right? Well, that's all I pay attention to. It's jungle gyms.
I don't know. The only slide I know of is in Mountain View, and they closed it, I think. There's a pole in the YouTube.
They're in Chelsea right now, which is
They're in Chelsea.
Chelsea's kind of like a hipster, down market, little bit hipster area.
It's very fashion forward.
It's expensive. It's expensive now.
Well,
isn't that where Sid and Nancy at the Chelsea Hotel?
I think you're in the wrong decade.
So it's now fancy now? It's no longer like where the heroin addict superstars hang out?
No. Not at all.
No, it's pretty frou-frou. So, there's a lot of good restaurants.
They have 750,000 square feet in Chelsea on 8th Avenue.
Well,
they bought
the building
in 2010 for $1.9 billion, and then on 9th Avenue in the Chelsea Market.
Well,
but they've run out of space.
Where they're going to find more. So, welcome to New York City, Google. Searching for space.
Good. You know, you can have the Google buses. Let the protesters vomit on your buses for a change.
We won't be able to tell the difference.
That's the thing. New York's probably going, come on. We'll figure it. We'll find somewhere.
We'll just keep building up.
Go higher. Tech advertising and media jobs in New York City have grown from 265,000 in 2006 to 327,000. It is boom. And
it is.
If San Francisco keeps acting nasty to the tech sector, it could be bigger boomer.
But I think, it's natural to go to a lot of these big cities, but I start looking at, you know, for a lot of people that I know, what we really care about is, you know, it being clean and having a really good connection. You know, and I think that there's a lot of
internet connection.
Like you know, when I was
they're not talking subway. You're not talking about
I'm talking about internet. Like internet.
Internet connection.
Yeah. I mean, I found myself, I think it's very hard to make the turn. But we did a job in Oklahoma City. I was talking to a guy in a bar, and I was like, so. Or is it Kansas City?
Some city.
Kansas City.
Kansas City has a Google Fiber.
It was Kansas City, but it was in Oklahoma. No,
Kansas City is not in Oklahoma.
It is.
It's in two states.
It's in two states. It's very confusing. Why can't
we just totally miss your joke?
Which
there?
Kansas City is Google in?
Oklahoma.
Okay.
It's
not Oklahoma. I don't know where they're getting Oklahoma. Called Isn't Missouri. It? Have you heard of it?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oklahoma.
So that Missouri. I apologize. It's been a long week.
I just got back from Brazil. I'm not
on
stupid. I know that the Kansas City
in
Kansas is not the Kansas City.
I understand.
In Missouri.
But you didn't know about the one in Oklahoma.
But I never heard of the Kansas City.
That's the one I just
Oklahoma.
Found it here. And there's a lot of people now in Missouri. They're very upset with me. So it's in Kansas City, Missouri.
And you guys both
sounded like, oh, no, it's in Oklahoma.
No, we just knew it wasn't in Kansas City, Kansas.
I just know it's not Kansas. Huh? It's somewhere else.
So anyway, but the I was asking a guy at a bar. I was like, so do you really get a gigabit? Like at home?
Does he?
He said, oh, you never get under, you never get over 930 megs.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Like, and he goes, and that's only speed test to Google. You know, and
hate
and
it
so,
when that
but I after that, I was like, oh, I wonder if we could open an office. And, you know, and so for me, I think that when you look at a lot of these protests we see in San Francisco, and when you look at the stuff that we're, you know, the people being upset, I wonder when these companies start deciding we're just going to find somewhere that's cheap, give it a great connection.
I think Petaluma could, you know, use a little fiber love. We love it up here.
I think Petaluma would be great.
Have you been here, Dan?
Oh, I used to live in Sebastopol.
Oh, that's right.
For years.
You're a hippie. Yeah.
But
okay.
I think a lot of those decisions are mostly based on infrastructure. It's who owns the pipes and who owns the, and how hard it will be to run the fiber. And it has less to do with people being interested and more to do with how the city has set up its
structure. Oh, I know what you guys, you were thinking about Virginia City, Nebraska. That's what you were thinking of.
I wasn't thinking about anything. I was still waking up.
I want the Google Island. That's what I want.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but we have a. You want another one of these?
Yeah, more questions.
Yeah, we've got from Steve in Florida. He said, "Are you going to comment on Adam Carolla's patent troll fight?"
No,
no. There we go.
All right, moving on.
There we go. There we
go. You know, on the under the advice of my attorneys.
Oh, you got to stay. Oh, yeah, you have to stay away from that.
I have been advised not to talk about that. Mm-hmm. But we support and love Adam, and support and his fight. And I know so many things that I cannot say. You hear that? You hear Lisa going?
By the way, that I will say that the This American Life on Patent Trolls. There's two
parter,
and those are must listen. This American Life is must listen to in general, but those two are particularly good.
And then also the Money podcast that the NPR does,
Market Watch,
Planet Money does a very good one on patent trolling as well. I am hopeful that all kinds of patent trolling are going to go away because there's a move in Congress to kind of restrict software patents. There's an executive order to change that as well from the Obama administration. I feel like we're understanding the problem that these software patents lead to. So regardless of my own dog in the hunt, and I do have a little bit of a dog in the hunt, I think that it's bad in general. And I hope that things are going to look up. What Intellectual Ventures, which is Nathan Myhrvold's company, is one of the worst in this group. And they were putting together a group of, I think, who joined it? Was it Yahoo? They're trying to create another patent fight. I'm just dimly remember this story. Microsoft is investing and Sony is investing. But Apple and Intel did not. This was a story that ran on TNT this week or maybe last week. Intellectual Ventures, which was started by a Microsoft millionaire, Nathan Myhrvold, a guy who really was pro-innovation. But basically, it was created to be a patent troll, to collect patents for things they didn't do, they didn't invent, and sue people or license them if they can, and if not, to sue them. Microsoft and Sony have invested in this Intellectual Ventures effort to raise more money to buy some new patents. Good news, Apple and Intel turned them down. So it's an interesting story. And there's Nathan pretending to be a chef, apparently.
Oh, he went to cooking school.
Yes, he did.
He is so phenomenal. He is one of the most phenomenal people ever. I mean, he's like...
He's brilliant.
He's found archaeological.
I know. And what's he doing with this patent troll stuff? Well, Nathan, knock it off.
Those patent trolls pay for all the other crazy stuff that he does, like make really, really expensive cookbooks that cut things in half.
Oh, that's right.
Isn't that his book?
Yeah.
They cut the charcoal thing in half and they take a picture of it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book.
It's cool.
I don't care. I'm not supporting Nathan in any of his ventures unless he knocks it off with the patent, with Intellectual Ventures and the patent trolling. It's called Modernist Cuisine. Oh, it's sous vide. That's why you like it.
There's a piece of
it. There's a piece of it, the sous vide. Very small.
This guy's a big sous vide guy.
I like sous vide.
Yeah, the photos in this.
$468? What is he needing a patent troll for?
It's like seven or eight volumes. It's huge.
It's the best book on cooking ever written.
It better be at that price.
Or collection of books.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
Doesn't this guy have enough money? He has to charge $500 for a book?
When you see it, you'll understand.
It's a 20-person team at the cooking lab.
I believe they built a lab specifically to shoot this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like a cooking book you've never seen before.
See, now you're going to make me buy that. This is the most expensive show I've ever done. Let's take a break. I maybe need to make some money so I can buy a $500 cookbook. So I have mixed feelings about Nathan Myhrvold because on the one hand, he's this brilliant guy who's done some amazing things. And yet, he's at the same time, he's causing huge havoc in the world with intellectual ventures.
Among others.
They're doing sleazy stuff, like they're making small holding companies and they're hiding the fact that they're behind it. And it's just sleazy stuff.
And the tactics kind of betray their intent, right?
Yeah.
Right.
They're very much a part of this.
And part of it is that we've
this
grown,
American
we've
Life
grown,
podcast. They talk a lot about intellectual ventures.
Well, and part of it is that we've allowed it to get much past the patent system, to go much past what it was originally, how it was set up. How it was set up actually worked very well, and then we just kept on making it, making compromises to a point where it doesn't work anymore.
No. Oh, we also has a $100 book on the photography of the cookbook. So if it's not enough just to buy the cookbook,
oh, I want that too.
Do you have the other one, the Modernist Cookbook?
What? No, I'm still waiting for someone to give it to me.
Oh.
I've only looked at it in the bookstore.
You should put it on your Amazon wish list. Maybe a fan will get it for you.
Yeah.
$100 photography of modern.
We'll take a look at this.
I went to the New York Academy of Sciences when this book came out, and Nathan Myhrvold was there with Padma Lakshmi. So the most brilliant man you've ever met, standing next to a supermodel, and I kind of got ushered into a conversation with them for about 5 seconds.
Wow.
And I'm looking up at her and I'm looking down at him. And but he's really, I would say in person, he was very soft-spoken. He was very inquisitive. He was not like an egomaniac by any stretch. But he really knows so much about everything. And I don't know. I mean, he figured out a way to make money. It was a loophole.
He's not doing anything illegal. He's taking advantage of the patent system as it exists.
Yeah.
So I guess in that regard, but it isn't ethical. And it has a huge consequence. Depressing innovation. And, here's a guy who made his money as a software scientist, as an innovator at Microsoft, and he's doing something that is really terrible for innovation, draining billions of dollars from R&D efforts to go to lawyers in court. And it's wrong. And so whether it's legal or not, it's wrong. And so this is an interesting fella. You got to wonder about the contradictions of this guy. I mean, I just like to stay home and cook. And I'm just going to start a company and I just won't pay any attention.
But I think, it's the job of Congress to fix it, the courts to fix it. I mean, when someone's taking advantage.
It's still immoral for him to be taking advantage.
I don't disagree. But I think that the solution is not going to be to get people like him to stop. The solution is going to be to rebuild the patent system.
By the way, if you don't want to pay $500 for the cookbook or $100 for the photographs from the cookbook, for a mere $100, you can get the home version of the cookbook.
There you go. There you go.
And all three, this is kind of a deal from Amazon, all three for $677.
It's like Microsoft pricing, right?
But they're not going to update it after next week.
So true.
Hey, by the way, did you see Microsoft says if you got Windows 8.1, we're not going to give you security patches anymore after next month.
What?
Ooh.
Why?
Let's save that for the break. That is, I was all hot. I was all excited. I was reinvigorated about the future of Microsoft. And then I read that and I thought, oh, I guess they're not changing that much. Our show brought to you by Audible.com, the great source of audio books, radio shows, classics, nonfiction, science fiction. Just love Audible books. I'm a major Audible fan. I've been listening to Audible since the beginning of the century. I like saying that, since 2001, because I had a terrible commute. Gabriel Garcia Marquez passed away this week. Very sad. But, of course, Audible has his books. If you've been thinking, gosh, I never read any Marquez, I want to read some. They've got them all. And beautiful, beautiful narration. I listened to Love in the Time of Cholera, which is one of my favorite books. I'd read it, but I listened to it on Audible, and it's just gorgeous. If you haven't read that or 100 Years of Solitude, you must. You can get one of them or both for free right now we're offering a special deal at audible.com/twit2. That's audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum Plan. That's a 2-book-a-month subscription plan. It's the way I go, the way I fly. But the first month is free, so your first 2 books are free. Pay nothing in the first 30 days. Cancel at any time. Keep the books forever. You also get the daily digest of either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal when you get a subscription plan. Maybe some Marquez. Or is that too abstruse, too literary? Perhaps you'd like to have some fun. You could listen to The Wind in the Willows. Or, oh, the new Daniel Suarez. We've talked about that before. This is a page-turner. Jeff Gerner, we had him on Triangulation with Daniel. He reads it so beautifully. Audible's done a great job with science fiction. Mark Rusinovich, if you haven't read Zero Day yet, Mark Rusinovich is a Microsoft researcher, security expert. He wrote this novel a couple of years ago, and it's basically come true. It is about a terrifying story of technology and security. And if you're a geek, you're going to love it. Steve Gibson just raves about Mark's books. Zero Day, and then the new one, I think, is coming out soon. Yeah, it's not on Audible yet, but will be any day now. The new one, Trojan Horse, Zero Day, and then the third just came out, or is about to come out any minute now, from Mark Rusinovich. Get those. Those are great. All you got to do is go to audible.com/twit2, audible.com/twit2, and you'll be getting 2 books to try it out. If you've never listened to audiobooks, this is a great opportunity to try them and listen. I love them. Listen all the time, and highly recommend it. To Dogfight right now. What?
That's how I clean my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I run out of Twit, and then I run out of NPR, and then I just move to Audible, and then I'm just like listening to some book and working my way through the yard in the back and everything else. It's perfect.
If you have a treadmill and you listen an hour a day on your treadmill, you know, life will change for you. There's so many good books here. Terry Pratchett's newest just came out. I'm a big fan of the Discworld series.
I've kind of gotten to the point where I take offense to the fact that there's some books that are, you know, when I find out they're not on Audible, I'm like, why?
I am a little behind. That's where I take offense to. I don't commute anymore, so I'm actually behind. Right. I just got Leviathan Wakes and Flash Boys, the new Michael Lewis. I can't wait to read that, but I'm finishing Dogfight. There's a new 43-hour biography of the Beatles that just came out, and that's volume one.
Holy smokes.
I can't wait to read that. Nick Bilton's Hatching Twitter just finished that. And Brad Stone's The Everything Store. I'm behind. I get more listening, less working. More working out, less working. Audible.com/twit2. You know, first 2 books are free. And then the rest of it, it's up to you. So, yeah, I saw this and I thought this was a very strange story. Apparently, Microsoft wants you to move along on Windows 8. Now, Windows 8.1 came out a few months ago, I think. Maybe, when did it come out? Help me out, chat room. 6 months ago. And really fixed a lot of the issues with Windows 8. Then they did an update just recently. Windows 8.1 update 1. Well, apparently, they're so anxious that you apply Windows 8 update that starting with the May patch Tuesday, Windows 8.1 users' devices without the update installed will no longer receive security updates. This is from Microsoft's TechNet blog. No more updates for Windows 8.1 if you don't apply update 1. You're being nagged by now a little bit about update 8 to the 8.1. And you have, you know, a few weeks to install it. But that's just bizarre to me. They will support 8.0, but if you have 8.1, you've got to get update 1.
It makes me wonder whether there's something that they don't want to deal with there.
It says if the Windows 8.1 update is not installed, newer updates will be considered not applicable.
Right. There's something deeper in there that they don't want to talk about, but they don't want to. I mean, that's what it feels like, is that there's something, because it's not like they're not supporting other more historical ones, but there's something.
No, they're going farther back. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So it seems like
what it can. Confusing way to coax your audience along, though.
Yeah.
Microsoft confusing?
Never.
Shocking.
I've been bullish after Satya Nadella, and I think I just bought a Windows Phone because I can make it Windows Phone 8.1, and I'm really impressed with it. They've added the Cortana speech. They've added the swipe keyboard style that I really like. And I think that they're giving away Windows for sub 9-inch screens. They're doing a lot of things right. Office 365 is now what you get the personal edition for $7 a month.
And they may be doing this right. We just may not know what all the reasons that they're,
maybe they
they're
have
those
to.
Decisions.
All right, you're the voice of reason. Thank you very much, Alex Lindsay.
It seems illogical that they're doing it, other than there's something seriously wrong with that, and they cannot. They don't want to advertise whatever that is, but they definitely don't want to keep it in the wild.
Right.
Well, one of the problems with Microsoft, very obviously, is that it became a conglomeration of different silos, and those silos moved at different speeds, they had different priorities within the company, and it's going to take a long time to kind of recombine the incongruencies there and get, you know, not just a product, but a culture that has shifted entirely. So seeing Windows 1 update 1.x.monkeys is, we're probably going to see that for a while, right?
I don't know. We'll talk about it. I'll tell you what, Windows Weekly Wednesday will be very interesting, both about Mary Jo Foley. I'm going to say, okay. Sometimes I'll say to Paul, okay, explain to me, what the hell is Microsoft thinking? He'll go, what are you asking me for? I don't know. I was about to buy a new car because I wanted to get Apple's CarPlay, but I don't have to now. I can get an Alpine or Pioneer aftermarket. Both companies have announced they will be making third-party aftermarket in-dash systems that work with CarPlay.
I think it's awesome. I haven't bought an aftermarket car system so long. I mean, that's why I had it like when I was in college. I had a Nakamichi,
Normally, you'd have to buy a 2014 Ferrari, Mercedes-Benz, or Volvo.
Right.
But now you can put it in your Hyundai. It uses, believe it or not, not iOS, but QNX.
Really?
Well, CarPlay can be added to existing systems as the technology works in conjunction with BlackBerry's QNX. And that's, my car has QNX. A lot of cars have QNX as the operating system. It's a real-time OS owned by BlackBerry, oddly enough. So Alpine and Alpines are less expensive. They're going to debut this fall in Europe and the U.S. with a base price of $500 to $700. Pioneer stuff, a little more expensive. Starts at $700, goes all the way up to $1,400. I'm not sure when the availability is. Early summer. Oh, wait a minute now. They're going to add this to existing receivers via a firmware update in early summer.
I wonder if I can put it in my car. Because I have an older car that is like in that horrible in-between where it only had a CD player.
Explain to me, Mr. MacBreak Weekly host, what CarPlay... Does CarPlay just put the screen up? Like, in other words, the car system just says, you just display whatever you want. It's not running the system. It's running on the phone still.
Yeah, it's still running from the phone. So the phone is just... It's like AirPlay. But
get Siri.
But it's in your car.
You get Maps.
Right. So, but it's still using the processor power from your phone.
Okay.
And does it have its own mic then built into the dashboard?
Oh, I don't know.
That would be important, I would think.
Yeah, you don't want to have to.
You need that audio there. I know a lot of times when you have an in-car dashboard, there's often a toggle on your steering wheel column, right?
Right.
But this, I'm assuming, wouldn't have that, so you would need to have really good voice control on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So if you buy it built into a car, you'll probably have controls on the steering wheel. It's a little dangerous if you have to reach for your phone.
Not that I would ever do that.
Yeah. Marissa Meyer's secret plan. According to Recode, Kara Swisher always knows what's up with Marissa Meyer. She says Marissa Meyer has a secret plan to get Apple to dump Google and default to Yahoo Mobile Search. Who knew Yahoo still had search? I thought that was Bing.
This is the iOS 8 rumor.
Right? Yeah.
Like that Google is going to get dumped and Yahoo's going to come in.
They've been moving that way.
Partnerships.
I guess I don't understand why Apple would go to Yahoo rather than go back to developing their own solution. I mean, they just got out of Google Maps so that they wouldn't have to be dependent on a third party. Like it seems,
that didn't go so well for them.
Yeah, that really worked.
Yeah, but it's still becoming. I mean, it actually did go really well for them. I mean, it didn't go well from a PR perspective. But what happens is that you're an
iPhone
user.
People end up using it,
and you hit a link, and you're in Apple, Maps, which is getting better. It's still a little funky, but
not bad.
But it get that. I admit the UI is better than Google Maps, in my opinion, but the accuracy is not.
And that's,
so that's the,
yeah. What would you rather have when you're lost?
Which is why I use Google Maps. You know, so I mean, but I noticed that, like, but what happens is I'll click on something and I end up on Apple Maps and I'll just use it. You know, just, and I think that a lot of people are just that way. What really gets confusing, by the way, is if you have voice activated on one of them and you open up the other one for some other search, and then you see one telling you, I got into this trying to get to Coachella, where I had one telling me to go one direction and the other one telling, because I had given two different searches. So having both on the phone has got its own problems.
How was Coachella?
Why is it telling me that? Coachella?
Yeah.
Amazing. It was so.
What are you, 18?
I was working.
Oh, okay.
I was working there. The best thing to do at Coachella was, or any of these big things, is work there, because then you get the film pass, which means you can go anywhere. And
so
you can,
I'm not so much of a nerd on that. And tell me about Coachella.
Well, it's like, it is just this massive
surely
music
those of
festival.
You back east have heard of this.
I have heard of it. I know it's
yeah,
a big.
Of course.
It's a
going
big
on
concert.
Right now. It's finishing up. It's two
it's
weekends.
A, it's music.
Yeah,
it's
90,000
right?
90,000 people in the Palm Desert.
How? Okay, so South by Southwest used to be music film, and now it's something
Coachella.
Weird
and crazy.
But
this
is, but
it's
Coachella's
just music.
More of a festival. Isn't
it's
it?
A music
yeah,
festival.
Yeah, it's way more. South by is an industry thing, right? Regardless of shows or not, it's an industry thing. And Coachella and a couple of the others that have popped up have been these evolving, you know, they're what happened after Lollapalooza fell apart, right?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a lot less, I mean, I guess.
I've always wondered.
In the terms, it's a lot less aggro.
I've always wondered what happened
than
after
Lollapalooza.
Lollapalooza fell apart. Yeah, I've always wanted to know that.
It's a way easier.
Now you know.
Like, I went to the early Lollapalooza. I mean, I was in the industry back then, and the Coachella is a much more laid back, really cool. People are just, you don't have people running over each other. You don't have people. The biggest problem you end up with is people taking too many drugs, typically, and in the sun.
it's in the desert.
The desert is pretty unforgiving.
Sea, right?
Yeah, and we had, I was there last weekend. So what we would do is we'd work all day, and then about 8, we'd finish what we were doing, and then we'd wander into Coachella and watch the Pixies and
so wait, what's the
Pharrell.
Working angle to it?
I can. We were doing hangouts.
He gets invited everywhere to do anything.
So he's
got a scam like you wouldn't believe. I was working at Coachella late one night.
Yeah.
So you were doing hangouts there?
Yeah, people doing hangouts with bands and stuff like that. So it was.
So they have bandwidth out there in the desert?
We did. We had a lot of bandwidth.
You want to know? How did you bring that bandwidth in? Like,
I didn't bring
it
in
a truck.
I didn't bring it in. We were just providing a little bit of the extra
the
bits and pieces to make it work. So
Alex
runs
a company that does this kind of stuff.
Yes.
Very high-end video conferencing stuff solutions.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. I mean, South by Southwest is probably the best example, but these festivals that have kind of come up as music and film festivals that grew into something else because people were interested in tech or food or something else. And it's just funny because it's so different from the days of a Woodstock or,
Coachella is much more like that,
or
though.
Or even Burning Man, you know, where it's sort of about the music. It's sort of about this creative community.
Right.
I mean,
this one's really about the music.
It's not an art festival. This is a music.
This is music.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of art here and there, but this is really, it's four or five stages. Really cool installations, really cool location. The only thing about it is, like, for instance, if you weren't working there, getting in and out, like, people are walking for miles to get to the parking and everything else. But it's great bands, as I said, really.
It's like everybody plays there, right? I mean,
and what's crazy is just people just show up. It's the cool place to go, so people just show up. Like, we were watching Pharrell, and then, you know, Gwen Stefani just pops out out of nowhere. Wow. Like, she's not advertised. She just kind of comes out and sings a song, and then Snoop Dogg just shows up on stage, and I think Beyonce showed up at her sister's concert, and so you get a lot of these kind of impromptu, you know, collaborations that just kind of pop up. Impromptu from the fans' perspective.
But there is, I see, large scale art installations. So there is some art to this.
Well, there's a huge astronaut that is, like, it looks like the MTV astronaut or whatever that is, like, literally, like, 30 feet high, that was, like, roaming around the system. And again, it's pretty surreal, especially at night. It's a pretty surreal experience. And the Replacements played, which was, I was, like, wandering around going, I think that's the Replacements. I'm old enough to know who that is. And so, anyway, there's a lot of mixture of old bands and new bands. And so you really get ones from the alternative, you know, the Pixies were playing. And so you get these, like, 80s alternative rock. And then you also get Pharrell, you know, and the Outkast. So Arcade Fire.
Muse.
Muse was
world's
like the
worst band.
But that was the one that had the that was supposed to be one of the best concerts there. I mean, I didn't see it. I was seeing something else, but it was that
you
was
were
the
working.
Yeah, was I wasn't. Weird. No, at the time, actually, I was not. I was.
He ate the brown acid.
Is that something else? Yeah.
Don't eat the brown acid. How many times do I have to tell you?
Chocolate was awesome.
So sorry. You getting the Galaxy S5?
Well, I did play with it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I have an iPhone for my personal phone, and then I use a number of different Android devices to sort of test software from time to time.
Yeah.
I'll play with anything.
Alex and I have settled on the HTC One M8, the new HTC.
I really like it. I still use my iPhone. I mean, I still use my
iPhone.
You
got a lot of trouble. 2 weeks ago on Mac Break Weekly.
I chose it.
You picked this as your pick of the week.
It's the best camera. This is the coolest camera. You know,
it's pretty cool.
My kids want me to make them aliens all the time. There's this thing where you can enhance the eyes, make the eyes really big.
I'll show you what
my kids
are
like, alien, alien, alien. Like today, I literally had to make like 3 alien shots for them while I was at home, you know, while we were at Easter Sunday. So, but the idea of being able to do short depth of field and automatically and then be able to post it. There's not really any other phone right now. And the reason I picked it specifically was because it was you Hasselhoffed.
I Hasselhoffed, but I'm trying to find the alien
more.
You know what? Google decided that the one with alien eyes is not a highlight.
I think it was.
Okay, so this is built into the camera. What a thrill!
Yeah,
my kids think it's awesome
that you can do that.
But it's also the short depth of field. That's not really what you use a lot. No.
It's pretty crisp. Even though it's 4 megapixels, a lot of people giving it negative reviews because David Hasselhoff seems to show up from time to time. But I think it's a very good camera. I like it. Now, the times have changed a little because Google has released its official camera app to the Play Store. So you can put it on, in fact, you can use it on the
M8. What you can do is you can take a picture and then move the camera a little bit to give it parallax. And then
it's kind of interesting.
I think it's fine. I mean, I like the idea that I can just take photos and it's just as, I mean, I think the reason I picked it was because I love the idea of having something that is just automatic. And I think everyone's going to have it in 2 years. You know, this is early on, but.
I think it was a very interesting way to implement it. So I took a picture, for instance, here's a picture of the microphone that I took. Actually, the first one was with everything in focus. And then I went and I made the background a little bit blurrier and then made it even more blurry. Mm-hmm. And this looks like a fancy SLR shot. And you can, by the way, make the foreground blurry and the background out of in focus because it has enough information to change focal planes. It's actually a little more flexible than the built-in application on the HTC One.
Now,
and it's free. Google's giving it away.
Think about Project Aura, if I may.
Let's talk about Aura.
So
I like that idea.
This is the module phone that Google is announcing as sort of a playground piece. And this week they announced that they were going to give a $100,000 prize to somebody who developed the best module that will plug into this phone. So I believe it's just going to be one piece of glass, and then the flip side of it will be ports for different components that you can plug in. So
do they intend to sell it that way? It feels like it might fall apart in your pocket.
I think they had a demo of it that actually didn't work because the screen was already cracked. They had dropped it and the screen had already cracked. But, you know, the idea is it would get away from some of the issues of fragmentation because you would have these swappable pieces.
Like Lego
block.
You would
just be able to update the component that you wanted.
Right.
And I think it's interesting, you know, instead of screwing on a lens to your camera, you could swap in a different
camera.
That's
one of the
I love the idea of someone like building a like half-inch chip with a crazy camera for my phone. I love the idea of just being able to swap that in and out. That'd be really
cool.
Or
if memory was the most important thing, you could put that in and get rid of other pieces that you don't need.
I like it that there's a Microsoft OneDrive ad and a Nokia phone ad in front of the Project Aura video demonstration. Let's jump.
I know their
jump
audience.
Ahead on that. I can't skip it.
I think Project Aura though is it's a neat idea, but it's another one of these Google experiments. I mean, let's not take it too serious.
Well, it was a Motorola experiment, which Google kept when they sold Motorola Mobility. They kept. Actually, this is Dieter Bohn from The Verge visiting the Project Aura team. So this is an R&D team that will stay with Google after the Motorola Mobility sale goes through to Lenovo. But the idea is, look at this. This is really interesting.
This could really help mature niches in the market that, you know, like photography or other things you would use a mobile device for. This is never going to be mainstream, but this could really push the edges of that market to do very creative stuff.
I guess. I mean, I think if a consumer is going to look at the feature set in the phone and just buy that phone, it's not the first time we've seen this. Visor had springboard modules, remember? You could pop into the – you don't remember, but the –
Oh, and there's a parallel trend with gaming PCs. You know, Razer just released a modular PC with swappable components. I think there is something to be said for that. You know, if you care about a particular spec and want to tweak that, then that's – it's interesting if it's not mainstream.
And it gives you a whole lot more flexibility over the price too. You know, you don't pay for the stuff you don't want.
What's encouraging is that we're far from the end of – it felt a little bit like we were at the end of the line in innovation in smartphones. The Galaxy S5 really isn't much better than the Galaxy S4, for instance. The HTC One M8's a little bit better than the M7, but maybe there is still a lot of room for improvement.
I think there's still a lot, even though this HTC is really great. I think there is an enormous amount of improvement in low light performance for cameras, and I think that cameras are still the number one thing that people use their cell phone for, over voice, over everything else.
I agree.
And the only thing that people should be focusing on, in my opinion, is, at this point, is low light. Because that's what people really, the average person, is doing a lot of.
Low light implies like you're sitting there with one candle. But low light is anything that's not bright sunlight. It's inside. Yeah. It's low light.
Yeah, I mean, being able to shoot inside and without grain. And that technology is out there. I mean, they're definitely, but it takes a bigger chip. It takes less focus on resolution and more focus on light sensitivity.
Do you think HTC was moving in the right direction with its Ultra Pixel?
Yeah. I think they're definitely going the right direction. I don't think they're there yet, but I think that they're definitely...
I think the hardware is going to get de-emphasized, and they're going to really focus on software. I feel like we're getting in the era of computational photography. If we can get the data,
mm-hmm.
and I think that we probably can get the data, that you're going to see computational photography really take over.
That's where Apple has always focused with the photography in the iPhone. It has been to de-emphasize the hardware and to talk so much about what the software is capable of doing. And that's really the thing that differentiates them and Android. I mean, this new Android app, the actual camera app, may make some difference, but that slow shutter speed and the slow processing speed in Android is just, I don't care how many megapixels you throw, and it's incomparable next to an iPhone.
I have a new metric for rating cameras because it doesn't make any sense anymore to talk about pixels.
Mm-hmm.
I have a new metric. It's called pleasingness.
Right.
Like, am I pleased by the photos I get? And actually, this is the HTC One camera. Let me.
By the way, you know what the number
one
problem with this camera is?
What?
The fact that they put it on the apex of a convex surface. So you're most likely to scratch everything as you set it down. I'm always careful now. I actually find myself setting my HTC down face down all the time because I don't want to scratch the camera.
Right.
You know, but it's become kind of I don't know whether it's really a real problem, but I can already see tons of micro scratches that are in front of my lens.
Let me take a picture of you. And now I think I have it set on the, slowly raise your device and keep the subject centered. So I slowly raised the device and kept the subject centered. Now it's processing the image. Look, you've got alien eyes. No, that's the other. That's the other thing. And then now I can tap the background. What can I do? I can tap the.
Well, it made it. I think.
It made it something.
So it definitely.
It did. Did it do anything? Oh, wait a minute! I first have to edit. No,
I think it made it out of focus.
Did it just do it? It does. The background's out of focus.
And it looks pretty accurate.
I think this to me is pleasing.
Yeah.
So it's not the most megapixels. It's not I don't know what the numbers are, but I find the image is pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I find the iPhone image is pleasing. I do agree with you, Dan, that the iPhone is sets the standard for all of this. But I think we're getting close. I think the S5 camera is very good. Obviously, the Nokia cameras are extremely good. You still think, have you played with the 1020 or the other Nokia cameras, Dan? Do you still think that the iPhone bests them?
I have not, you know, and in fact, I've seen them only very rarely. I get sent Android phones to test all the time, but I never get sent these Lumia phones, which also kind of shows, you know, I'm not the highest on the tech totem pole, but it shows where the priority is, and it just has not shifted to Windows Phone.
No, I agree. We don't see review units either. I actually had to buy, I've ordered a 1520 just so I'll have it, and that's 20 megapixels, I think. Not the 41 of the 10-20. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I think what the good news is, at least at the high end, the picture, the capability is getting pretty good.
Yeah.
And across the board, iPhone probably still the best, although I think there are those who argue the 10-20 is better. And Nokia, by the way, also has that that focus choice stuff.
Do you have other feature wish list items you want to see in a phone that we don't have today?
Well, one thing that's interesting, I see Samsung doing this, and now HTC has done it on the M8. This works with the Fitbit app. It does some of that, you know, health stuff. So both the Galaxy S4, the S5, and the HTC M8. You can actually, you know, have Fitbit monitor your footsteps.
So it'll track where you're going all the time.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
And it sends
great.
It right back to Google, right?
Which is also in parity with the iPhone.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I think that for me, low light performance is something I don't see on any phone. And only recently did we see, I think part of it is now we have cameras, you know, Nikons and Canons that do incredible low light. So you know that it's possible. And so I think that's frustrating. I think that I want more interaction of my phones with other hardware devices. I mean, but I'm kind of a pro user, so I'm a little frustrated about how hard it is to get, for instance, an iPhone to interact through the Lightning connector to lots of other things. You know, and
I agree. Having a situational awareness, becoming part of the Internet of Things, being able to control stuff and so forth.
And not necessarily really just great. Wireless. You know, like,
because you have a very powerful processor in your pocket.
Right. I mean, we just like the little, like Mackie makes a mixer that basically is a hall that you can just shove your iPad into and take over. And while a little limited, it is an incredible idea of, like, having manufacturers stop making stop trying to do the interface. Like, literally just stop, you know, and create a hall and let it be Apple or Android or whatever. I think that is something that we're just seeing the beginning of. And I think a lot of manufacturers, when you see CarPlay, I think what you're seeing is manufacturers starting to realize that they're just not very good at that, and that's really hard.
Point of sale systems.
Yeah.
Who gets a cash register anymore if you're a small business? I mean, you get an iPad and get a Square.
Get a Square. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And by the way, somebody in the chat room says, I just popped in to mention that the sensor used by the iPhone, the Galaxy S4, the Lumia 920, all are from Sony. It's true. They make the sensors for most of these. And he says he believes the Xperia Z2 has the best camera of all. That actually is not my experience, but he does quote a review at a site that really is pretty good on this stuff, DxO Optics, where they talk about optics involved in this and sharpness, because that's what they do. They measure this stuff, and they say it's a very accurate camera.
I think Instagram users have proven that accuracy is only very small.
I don't think it's everything, is it?
No, it's again, I think the pleasingness style. Of when you're the style.
I agree.
That you're
gonna post. That's why you can look at a graph like this, which is their mobile benchmark tests, and I don't think this tells the story. I think pleasingness tells the story.
Well, and I think cool features, like, for instance, the other thing that the HTC has is the Photosphere, where you can shoot the sphere and then I can post it to G+. And people can actually click on it and, like, experience the sphere, you know, and those kinds of giving people a better way to interact with where you are or what you're sharing, I think, are great features.
I did have a Z2 for review. I took a bunch of pictures with it. I was underwhelmed. They weren't particularly pleasing.
But it goes underwater.
Almost everybody goes underwater now except our phones and Apples.
I have a case for mine.
Don't dunk Apples.
I can do 300 feet.
But see, on the graph, the Z2 is ahead.
There you have it.
And that's all that matters. There is a very big class of geeks, including, obviously, this fellow in the chat room, who look at this. They look at specs, speeds and feeds, as you said. Mm. And they say, well, I can see on the graph it's better, so it must be better. And that's pleasingness does not take that into account. It is a totally subjective measurement.
The Z2 just came out, so we haven't gotten it in for
We real. Haven't? What did I have? Oh, I had
the
Z1S. At the Z1S, I apologize. So I haven't seen the Z2. Is it? It just came out. So are we going to review it soon?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah,
yeah.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
Apologies. I had a Z1S. You're right. Our show today brought to you also waterproof, but I didn't dare dunk it because I have a bad history with that stuff. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform, hosting and software that makes it easy for you to create a gorgeous website. I'm not going to say InsideTwit is a gorgeous website. That's our blog site running on Squarespace, inside.twit.com. But I'll tell you what, you can't bring it down. If every single person watching right now went there, we could bring almost any site down, but not Squarespace. No siree. That's because Squarespace so tightly integrates the software with the hosting that they have virtually endless capacity. They could fire up more bandwidth like that. In fact, it happens all automatically, transparently, and instantaneously. So what the effect is, you always have a highly responsive site that looks great, that's always secure because they apply the patches for you. And it's easy for you. You don't have to be a web guru to use Squarespace. You start with the 25 gorgeous designer templates. Use the logo creator tool to create a great logo. Use their iOS apps to post, to check metrics, to approve comments. You can always, use a designer and do some more heavy-duty stuff because they do have a great developer platform if you're a CSS guru, for instance. Look, Chad's making us a new logo. I love it. You have access to more than 300 Google fonts. It is really great and getting better all the time. Now they've added e-commerce to all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations. So if you're a nonprofit or a school fundraiser or whatever, it starts at $8 a month. That includes the free domain name when you sign up for a year. All the sites look great on all size screens. They're automatically mobile ready. Even the code underlying is beautiful. And while I don't think you're going to need help because it's very intuitive, they do have the best support in the biz, 24/7 from their Squarespace offices in luxurious Chelsea. Actually, I think they're in Soho, south of Houston.
They are.
Is that where they... Oh, you know. Yeah. What am I saying? Dan, you used to work out of their offices.
Yeah, with Dan, with Anthony. They're great guys. Not to plug. You
know, I really like them. I think they're... I don't mind saying that. I really love these guys, and I think they do a great product, and I want you
to try
it.
Our sites are all Squarespace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really easy to talk about this. If you go to squarespace.com, you don't need to use a credit card or even our Twit offer code. Just start playing with it. Import your existing content. Make your own site. Change it how it looks with a single click of the mouse. But when you do decide to sign up, make sure you use the offer code Twit. You'll get 10% off, and you'll be showing them that you heard about it on This Week in Tech. Squarespace.com, a better web awaits, starting with your new website at squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT when you decide to buy. You will save money. Yeah, I forgot. You know those guys very well, Dan.
Oh, they're wonderful people.
Yeah. And Anthony's, who is it? It's a big supporter of what you're doing now with his new effort.
Dane was, right? Anthony is, and I think Squarespace just raised, they just landed another $40 million. So,
oh, well, there they go.
Not to contribute to the...
You know, they bought a Super Bowl ad. I had a feeling they were doing okay.
They're doing okay.
Wow.
And they're good people.
Yeah. Well, I knew him, like, practically when Anthony was still in a dorm room.
Yeah.
So
right,
it's really
right.
Great to see that success and the progress, and that's what happens when you make a great product. DSL report says cord cutting on the rise, especially among the young. It's a study by Experian Marketing Services. The number of cord cutters, and Experian defines that as people who have broadband but do not have cable.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone up 44% in the last 3 years.
We have cable, but I barely know why. I mean, I watched This Week with George Stephanopoulos. I think that's the only thing I watch live. I mean, in the Steeler games.
Now, according to this study, in 2013, 6.5% of U.S. households were cord cutters. And that's up 50% from 2010, 44% from 2010. The number increases for users who subscribe to Netflix or Hulu. A fifth of Americans use those services. A fifth of Americans who use those services don't subscribe to cable. So there's a strong correlation between using Netflix or Hulu and not having to use cable. That makes sense. One quarter of adults between 18 and 35 who subscribe to Netflix or Hulu don't pay for TV. That makes sense. You don't have the money. You know, you don't want to spend the money, and you're used to watching on a screen.
And this gets back to interface and user experience. I mean, if anyone has used the Comcast interface, I mean, if you think the Apple TV interface is bad, just you go into Comcast. I mean, you get used to it, but that is the most butt ugly, stupid, messed up system ever made. Like it is. I think it's running on like a 1988 ROM
chip.
It
feels
like it, doesn't it? Oh, it's so Windows horrible. XP. What is wrong with these people?
I'm going to do a review actually on before you buy. I think tomorrow the TiVo Romeo Pro. So TiVo now TiVo is another company that hasn't evolved as much as I'd expected. By now, it should be. We were using TiVos in 2000, right? Mm. But it works with a cable card, so I don't need a cable box. It does, I can do, at least in some areas, in this area, we can do on-demand from Comcast. So that means I don't have to listen to, you know what, on-demand in this area, I don't know if this is everywhere. Maybe it's the same in New York. They have this these e-hostesses who just blather on about programs.
When you're in on-demand.
When you're in, and you can't get out. It's like, and if you stop a show or pause a show, they come back. Like it's quiet and you leave the living room and then all of a sudden you hear voices coming from the living room and it's the E hostesses trying to get you to watch, you know, The Good Wife or something. And I don't want that. Anyway, that's not on TiVo. You can, cross channel and service search. So they have Netflix, Hulu, Amazon streaming, and of course on demand plus whatever's on your channel guide and you search all at once. So it'll say, oh, you can watch that show, and it'll show you all the different ways you can watch that show.
And you're right. TiVo really kind of blew that first mover advantage. But what they did do is them and Slingbox really helped prime the market mm-hmm. for what we're seeing now, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, with the high-end TiVo, I think the Romeo Pro and the Romeo Premier or Plus, whatever it's called, it has Slingbox-style features.
Yeah.
So I can watch on my iPad here. I can watch my TiVo at home. Or anywhere in the house. That is kind of cool. And control it and have all that stuff. It's very much like a Slingbox. So I think there are better solutions. I wish it were a little more elegant. By now it should be.
I'm curious to see. So I think this is my big theory for Apple, is that the safest way for Apple to experiment with this would be to incorporate Apple TV into a 4K monitor that's designed for their Mac Pro. So they just have a 4K monitor. And oh, by the way, the 4K monitor has... And it's a 32-inch or 40-inch or whatever. And, oh, by the way, it has a Apple TV built in.
What?
Like,
oh, they don't.
It would take... I'm saying that would be...
You got me excited for a moment.
But that would be the safest way for them to continue the hobby. You know, just because it's a chipset that they just add. It would be simple for them to add to it. And then it's just a... they're not selling it as the Apple TV.
Right. They're looking at studies like this going, okay, that market's creeping up. And by the way, they don't call it a hobby anymore, notice.
Right.
It's not a hobby anymore.
But I think
I like that idea.
And you add a webcam to it. You add a or whatever with a little slide thing or whatever. But the point is that that's something that I think would be very very interesting to see Apple kind
do
of safely
think,
going to.
I mean, I think we know the difference. But do you think mainstream America knows the difference between the crap interface on their DVR box from the cable company versus an Apple TV?
No, my kids won't use the Comcast one.
Your kids?
They just go.
Different.
My kids are like, but my kids are, I mean, what I mean by that is I have a 4-year-old daughter who all she knows how to do is get to the Apple TV. Like she switches the input and then she totally understands
the
Apple
TV. If you've never had filet mignon, the hamburger from McDonald's tastes fine. And I think that most people haven't had an experience of a good user interface, so they just don't know any better.
Well, the user interface will stop you, but the real matter is the content, right? So I don't want to watch regular TV with commercials. Right. I don't want to have a DVR that I have to set up to record it, then fast forward through
the commercials. It's a lot of work.
I want to be able to binge watch shows when I'm interested in them. Yeah. I want creators who are making content that is more suited for online distribution and streaming. So I want somebody to be writing a 3-part series or a 3-season series where they know the end of the story. They can plot it all out.
Arc.
They can have a good arc. Yeah, and I think that's really the more important revolution that's happening with TV is how we're writing differently for it because the distribution model has changed.
Well, and also this stuff can be smarter and it needs to be smarter. And as a result, you get a smaller audience, but because this new model works with this, you can have Mad Men has 1 million viewers. It's not a huge show, but it can succeed for AMC in these new models. And that's kind of critical as well, is that you have a model so you can reach out and you can make better, smarter programming for the smaller audience because you have a way to monetize it.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things as these get bigger also is that we really live in this 2-hour, 44-minute, 22-minute world, which is where, but that starts to, and YouTube's already begun to really break that up, where you can start thinking in 3-minute or 8-minute, and as that market continues to get bigger.
YouTube getting bigger on the small side, small short stuff.
Yep.
And then, meanwhile, we're watching 13-hour movies on the on AMC.
Right.
I do think we've become accustomed, though, to the 25-minute cycle, right? 30 minutes with commercials, mm-hmm. 22, 25 minutes, and then the 42-minute show, which is the hour-long show with commercials,
right.
That we've become accustomed to it both in watching, like what our attention span will hold,
right.
How often we expect to have a plot twist happen. And writers are really good.
There's a beat.
Yeah, and writers are really good at hitting that pacing,
yeah.
too. So I think those formats are fine. I mean, there's certainly room for a lot of experimentation, but yeah. I like those. I like
those. No, I think they're great. I think
are we going to have another format that's an 8-minute format or 5-minute format? Is there a sweet spot?
I think there's a really interesting possibility of like 8-minute, 5 to 8-minute formats. What used to be a segment, you know, could be really its own little bit, you know.
So a network package ranges, depending on the show, Good Morning America, 2 to 4 minutes. If it's 60 minutes, then you maybe can get as much as a 15-minute package.
Mm-hmm.
But I think really they're shorter than you think, believe it or not.
Well, but I think like the 5 to 8 minute, I think yeah. that there's because you could really do it. You can do small. I mean, I have to admit that I've been working on a bunch of stuff that's like 5 to 8 minutes long. And,
right.
and so it is, you can definitely tell a whole mini story that's
right.
connected to a larger series in that little segment. Cause that's what you're seeing when you're watching. But I think when you're watching something like 24, I mean, you really are seeing it in 8-minute chunks, you know, 6 to 8 minute chunks.
Yes, you are, because of the ad.
And then there's yeah. an ad, you know, and so the thing is it told you a whole story there and then it stopped.
Well,
yeah.
Even movie
that
trailers.
Key, the story is key. And what Jill said is exactly right. As long as we are in the process of refining and getting very good at narrative content and narrative storytelling, it doesn't really matter what the, you know, formats evolve and change and always have. I mean, if you look at the last 50 years of television, formats have tightened and become more refined. But what really does matter is the economics. Like you said a moment ago, Leo, that we can, and we see this in web publishing, we can live in niches and those niches can make money.
Yeah.
But as long as there is distribution and a market for it, this stuff will continue to evolve and we will see changes in how we consume content and what a good package is and that kind of stuff. But, you know, as long as there's a market for it and as long as it's a good story and the distribution is there, then it will continue to evolve.
I think it's so interesting that we are seen as such a short attention span culture. And yet, Lord of the Rings, 8 hours, right, before you could see the end of that, or 9 hours before you could see the end of that story. House of Cards, you know, that was a 2 16-hour story arcs or whatever.
Yeah.
We are, for such a short attention span society, we seem to like long-form stuff an awful lot. And a 90-minute movie now is almost seeming too short to tell a compelling story. The character development we get on modern drama, episodic drama, is so rich and deep.
And my wife just, while I was gone, watched all of Game of Thrones again, you know, just to get caught up as she got ready for the new season. And she was just like, there are so many things that you see when you see it all together that you don't see when it's a week.
That's a good example, because yeah. that show is...
So many complicated things going on.
There are not many shows that need a wiki and an app just to figure out who the hell... who's that guy?
Who's that?
Why exactly. do you shoot... Him? What the?
It took me a while. I thought there were three different people that were Stannis for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, you know,
oh,
like,
who is Stannis?
They looked
Baratheon.
Similar.
They
yeah.
all
yeah.
looked the same.
Baratheon.
Yeah, they were
oh,
the
yeah.
two people that looked the same.
You just can't keep track of them.
Exactly.
I did too.
Yeah,
and
like,
then
isn't
King
that Stannis?
Slayer.
And my wife would be like, no, it's
and
not
then
Stannis.
The Kingslayer came on. I said, that's not the Kingslayer because his hair's not blonde anymore.
Right.
So I got very confused. So fortunately, there's a wiki and there's a great app on the iPad. But you have to buy each season. It's like a freemium app for Game of Thrones. It gives you everything you need to know about what's going on. I swear to God, last season, remember the show where they're all standing on the pier and somebody's died. I don't know who's died. And he's in a boat and the boat's going down and they keep shooting the flaming arrow and they keep missing. I don't know who's shooting. And then another guy says, out of the way, kid, shoots the arrow. I don't know who any of these people are.
Right.
And I'm watching this and I'm going... I'm sure this is a meaningful scene, but I don't understand the meaning because I don't know who the hell they are.
There's no spoiler alerts here because Leo doesn't know the names of anybody.
I just they told you nothing.
Did you already talk about the was it the English teacher with his class? He was having trouble with I think it was an English teacher or a history teacher who was having trouble with his class paying attention. So if they got out of hand, he started just writing down who dies in Game of Thrones.
Oh, you know? Oh. that's cruel. He should be fired.
You know what? It solved that problem really quickly.
It's a long list, too.
But he would start with the ones they knew, but he'd just keep on going, you know, because he'd already read the whole book. So I'll just work you through it.
Man, and they've done nothing this season to make that better, I can tell you right now. All right, we are going to take a break. No more spoilers.
Nope. Any more questions?
I actually got up out of bed last Sunday night. Because I hadn't watched Game of Thrones or Silicon Valley. And I started seeing tweets. And I thought, this is bad. So I actually got up out of bed and watched them. Because I knew there's no way I'm going to keep my head clear. So I better watch it. Terrible teacher. That's cruel.
I just thought, well played. Cool. Well played.
Hey, I know there's a lot to watch on TV and off. But if you missed any of the great stuff we did this week on Twit, we've taken it and we've made an 8-minute compendium of the best of Twit. Take a look.
Previously on Twit, Tech News Today.
Aereo takes its case to the Supreme Court next week, but first the company is throwing itself on the mercy of the public. ProtectMyAntenna.org is part of that company's PR push to convince the world that it's merely renting antennas, not stealing content.
Marketing mavericks.
What we really see with developers who are successful and making more than $100,000 a month are using between 4 and 10 monetization methods per game.
Twit Live specials.
I thought it'd be kind of a good thing, given all the attention to Heartbleed and the need for people to change their passwords, to talk about the use of a password vault, how you set it up, how you use it, why it's a good idea.
Gizwiz.
The beer belly is a way to conceal and hold liquid in a fake
Chad
belly.
Would get one of these.
Makes you look like you're
fat. Oh, my word. I would not walk around the clock with it hanging down.
You
like
don't
that.
Think this is a trend?
I already have a beer belly, so I don't need it.
Twit. It's where your brain and tech meet.
Oh, man. You still wearing that beer belly, Chad?
All the time.
I thought you gained a little weight. I'm really glad you ordered that. I wanted to order one of those for a long time, ever since I saw that on TV.
It's in my office if you want to keep it.
Mike Elgin is in charge of our news operation. He does, of course, TNT Tech News Today, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC. Mike, what's coming up? What are we be looking at this week?
Coming up this week, a whole lot of earnings reports. Apple, Qualcomm, and Facebook report earnings on Wednesday the 23rd. Microsoft, Verizon, and Amazon are up next on Thursday the 24th. Back to you, Leo.
We'll be watching with interest. Make sure. Yeah. Somebody in the chat room said, very kindly, I have no more room for a beer belly, Chad. That space is currently occupied.
They need to make a beer second belly, or maybe
you could have double chin.
Yeah,
if you have
I
a double
was
going to
say beer
sure,
beer chin.
That's a good idea. Hey, I hope you're all having a happy Easter. I don't know if you celebrate Easter, but if you're in the group of people that do, I hope you had a happy Easter and that the Easter Bunny was kind to you. We had a very good. I didn't get it in the promo, but I wanted to mention This Week in Law, this week episode 255, the guest, and I'm going to try to get him on. Triangulation. It's James Barrett. He's written a book called Our Final Invention, and it's well worth watching the first, 45 minutes of the show. I actually watched the whole show, but the first 45 minutes, they talk about our final invention. It's artificial intelligence and the end of the human era. We've talked a lot about this in the last few episodes of Triangulation, the idea that in as little as a decade, and Ray Kurzweil and others have said this, AI could match, then surpass human intelligence. We had Jeff Hawkins on, founder of Palm, a couple of episodes ago. He's the guy who said, he's working on a new kind of artificial intelligence, actually making hardware and software that works the way our brains do. And he said, you know what? I said, are you worried? He said, don't worry. It's not going to be a problem. Machines are not going to take over as long as you don't let them replicate. But if you let them replicate, all bets are off. But he says, so what Barrett's been saying is, okay, don't you think that with, so many people around
the machines making the machines,
somebody's going to let the machines make machines and then it's all over.
We already have machines making our cars. Right. They're just not making each other yet.
Our final invention, the heedless pursuit of advanced artificial intelligence. There's nothing you can do about it. It's too late.
You know what my big thing is?
What are you worried about?
I think we're more likely to virtualize our world into a big, giant video game that we lock into than have machines take over this world.
How do you know that hasn't already happened?
I know.
Mind blown.
So anyway.
Mind blown.
One more bit of promo.
More? Oh, let's not forget our T-shirt.
Oh, a new T-shirt.
This is a new one. I really like this. Now, what we do is these are limited time only. We only allow you to buy these for a month. This is our spring 2014 T-shirt. Again, a wonderful design from our 99 Design team, 99 Designs designers. There's a tank. We have women's sizes as well, so we have a women's tank. And we need to get 500 before we'll even begin to think about printing these. So right now, only 106 sold. TEESpring.com/twit. I think these are very, I really like these. By the way, the hoodies are starting to arrive. People are loving the hoodies. People are loving the hoodies. So thank you for everybody who bought one. And once these are sold out, we don't make them anymore. That's it. We break the mold. We shoot the designer. It's
these guys at 99 Designs thought this was great. I got paid for this. And then some guy shows up at the door with a twit.
Sorry, you'll never make another design again. Actually, they used to do that in the Middle Ages. I remember going to Prague. They have a beautiful, in the old town Prague, a beautiful, very elaborate clock made in the Middle Ages. The people come out on the hour, and they dance, and they do all sorts of stuff. And the king who commissioned it didn't want another one made, so he blinded the inventor. Oof. That's cold. That's terrible. I'm a little worried. Remember, I did a review of this. I bought this LaCie little big disc.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Very fast SSD drive for my new Mac Pro. Apparently, the French hardware company, which is now a Seagate subsidiary, says virtually everyone who shopped on LaCie's website for the last year is at risk.
Oops.
A year-long credit card breach. I'm one of them.
Oof.
But how could this happen for a year? They were informed about the breach March 19th by the FBI. They think that all transactions between March 27th, 2013 and March 10th, 2014 were affected. Brian Krebs actually broke this on his Krebs on Security blog last month. He was the guy who discovered it. And it's a group of hackers that have broken into dozens of online stores that used Cold Fusion. And it's a security flaw they found in Adobe's Cold Fusion, very popular in online commerce. Adobe itself, of course, had the similar problem.
I think this is the new generation of malware is going after, you know.
Sure.
This is instead of trying to hack your computer or whatever, we're going to hack. It's much more efficient to hack a server that has 3 million, points of data.
So about a year or two ago, I met with this company. I'm not going to say the company name because I'm not sure that they're still in business. But they were coming up with a business solution for handling company credit cards, essentially. And what they did was they issued to each employee a unique card that could then generate new, unique 16-digit numbers so that they could restrict how and how much each employee spent. So imagine that you went to make a purchase online and you had a unique code that was only good for $50. And once you used it, it was gone forever.
It's a great idea.
It's amazing. Why aren't we doing it? Like it's kind
Discover
of simple.
Discover and I think American Express will give you one-time numbers. So that's, if you have, you should ask your credit card company. Some cards companies do this where you call them up, you say, I want a one-time number. They'll generate a number for you either on the website or over the phone. You use it, and there's two choices. You can use one that's merchant restricted, so this will only be used at Amazon. And you can use one that's only can be used once, and then it's no good anymore. And that's a great idea.
It is. It's got to be more convenient than that,
though. Yeah, it's too hard. Yeah. You're not going to do it. Chip and PIN is coming in the next year, so we will get a little bit more secure on our credit cards.
When I'm in Europe, I always feel like I'm like a caveman. Because they always look at you like,
what's your PIN?
Slide it in. And you're like, and then they're like, oh, right.
Oh,
and then
there's like American.
There's like a discussion of like how to deal with the American and his crazy card, you know. And
I used a credit card in the Hurtigruten in Norway. And the guy practically patted my head. He said, no, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, yeah, you don't. Oh, I'm sorry. You're American. I didn't realize. Wow. Wow. Let's take a break. When we come back, Maglev trains for all. I just like that's a good tease.
Love that.
Everybody, and you will get a Maglev train, and you will get a Maglev train.
Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. I've told you before, you got to back it up if you want to get it back. Backup is not just for the, average Joe. Yes, you computer geek, you should be backing up too. In fact, you more than anyone, you're setting the tone. And, you know, help your friends and family back up too. You want a solution that's easy to set up. It's one of those solutions you can set up and forget. You pay for it once a year and you just know you're safe. Then you want Carbonite. Mac or PC, Carbonite is flat rate online backup. It's automatic. You don't have to think about it. It's totally secure. In fact, you can use, if you're worried about Heartbleed, and they don't have a Heartbleed problem, but if you were worried about, you know, that kind of security, you can use what they call Trust No One encryption. Carbonite supports that, which means only you can unlock it, only you. So it's super private. It's one of the few backup solutions that uses TNO backup. Steve Gibson vetted it for us. It also has a lot of nice features. You can get to your backup anywhere. You log onto your Carbonite account. They even have free Carbonite apps. Plans are very affordable. $59.99 a year for everything on a single computer. That's less than $5 a month. That's a great deal. And they have plans for larger, you know, small businesses and so forth. You got to back it up to get it back. These guys know, these are the guys. They know what they're doing. Carbonite.com. Use our offer code TWIT. You'll get 2 months with purchase. It's 2 weeks free. You do not need a credit card, but do use our offer code when you sign up. That way you'll get 2 months when you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right. Carbonite.com. Questions? Any questions from our question control panel?
Yes, Leo. We have from Hawaii Cop in Washington, U.S. What is Google going to do with the end of Google Voice?
So this is something that's coming up, and I don't think it's the end of Google Voice. God, I pray it's not. But March 15th. Wait a minute. Was it March 15th?
March 18th.
March 8th. Wait a minute. No. We're in April
May
now.
May 15th, you mean.
So maybe May 15th. They've announced that they're going to merge Voice with Hangouts. Google's been doing this all along, right? They took Google Talk, made it part of Hangouts. The concern, and nobody knows, is that some features may get swallowed in that merger. If they do, I will be very disappointed. Remember, Google bought Grand Central to create Google Voice, and it's insanely useful for free. You right. use it, right?
I mostly just use Hangouts. I don't really. I have to admit, I don't talk to people on.
Sometimes I give out a Google Voice number if I'm working with, say, a PR contact, and they really, really want a phone number. I'm a little hesitant to give out my personal phone, so I give them a Google Voice number. I know I can get text. I know I can get. You can control it. Yeah.
Within Hangouts, you can already add a phone number to the Hangout, which seemed to have been quietly rolled out. And I would imagine that this is a similar kind of inbound-outbound routing feature. And
it's bad for people like me who use Obihi or Talkatone.
Yep.
There are a number of services, I use both, that's how I know, that tie to Google Voice. And so I can, for instance, place phone calls on my iPad,
which
is amazing. I always wanted my iPad mini is big for a phone, but I always wanted phone capability. If somebody calls my Google Voice number, rings my iPad among all the other devices, using Talkatone, which is a free and paid, a freemium service, I get text messages, Google Voice text messages and phone calls. I can answer the phone. It's awesome. But that's not going to work after May 15th. Obihi,
same
thing.
I bet it'll be integrated, though. It's working now. You can already do that and add phones and remove phones. So I'd imagine it'll just be integrated.
Talkatone does something a little weird, as does Obihi. I think they integrate through Google Chat. They do something weird. But they sent me a notice that says, after May 15th, Talkatone will not work with Google Voice. There are no exceptions. But you can transition to a new account, I guess. Move your voice number, but that means it's not going to be Google Voice anymore. I don't care about Talkatone. I want Google Voice.
Right.
So this is just a service that worked with Google Voice.
I think one thing that's really missing in the Hangout app in general is that, you know, I when I'm overseas, I make almost all my calls with Apple FaceTime audio. You know, I don't need to do it video. I just want to talk to people.
Right.
And I feel like that's one thing that you don't have. In Hangouts, you can add a number, but you can't just do a voice call. You know, and I think that is something that I would love to see because I use We obviously we do a lot of Hangouts, so I use the Hangout app a lot. But
one
being
thing
able
that's
to do
going
that is,
away is XMPP, and that's what both Talkatone and Obihai use.
It's Jabber, right?
It's Jabber. It's what Google Talk was, the underlying service Google Talk. They killed Talk. They kept XMPP going for a little longer, but that's over May 15th. And I guess that really, and maybe this is Google's plan, cuts off these third-party services riding on top of voice. I would love to see Hangouts add some features like, one of the reasons I think our audience is particularly interested is I've been pushing Obihai for a long time. This was a great deal. You buy a $40 hardware device, you got a landline phone that uses your Google Voice. It was really awesome. But might as well toss it now.
I'm finding myself, I can barely remember I was very embarrassing. I had to give a number, an international flight for my wife, and I realized it took me a little while to come up with my wife's phone number now, because I just know her as, whatever I say, and I haven't dialed her actual number for a long time. And I think that we're a decade away from not having phone numbers. I mean, I don't think that we're really going to do this for much longer. I mean, the big problem with a lot of these.
I don't mind having one number for the rest of my life.
But I don't think it's going to be one number. I just don't think it's going to be a number. I think it's just going
to
be.
You have to have a.
Your Skype ID.
Have an ID that is unique.
Unique.
But I think we're going to have like our Skype ID or our
phone numbers work so well though, because if you got area code, everybody in the world has a unique phone number.
Yeah, but I pick my numbers now. Like my Android phone is a Washington D.C. phone because that's where other office, and this one is this. But it doesn't. But I guess for me, I think that whole global needing to be specific somewhere doesn't really mean anything anymore. I mean, I think that we're all I think that it's just how to contact me is what's important, and I don't know if I like the fact that without a number, now I control completely, who can call me, who can't call me, who can, and it's no longer, and the big problem with a lot of these right now is that the VoIP solutions actually don't manage bandwidth very well. So, that's the biggest problem that I have overseas, is that they try to make it really high quality, whether it's GoToMeeting or Apple, FaceTime audio or any of these other ones. They try to use up too much bandwidth, Skype even. Whereas what you really need is something that I can say, okay, I want low bandwidth. I don't want to use more than 8K a second.
It's a phone.
But the phone, you make it a phone, and then I can get a good, solid connection.
You know, what this could be very good for are companies like Twilio that provide that type of underlying. Right. They do the infrastructure, right? And so this will be good. Third-party developers will be fine. No, it won't be Google Voice, but it could be the third-party developers are building Twilio and do that kind of stuff.
I agree. And there are lots of good choices. Skype's a good choice.
We use TeamSpeak. For a bunch of really low bandwidth impact, and
it's just not free anymore.
Mumble.
Right.
We've been lucky because we had free.
Yeah, exactly. When we have it, we just put up our own server.
And I don't want to be Chicken Little. I don't know what's going to happen. This is merely something that Google said they were going to deprecate almost a year ago, XMPP. But I do hope, and I'm not saying this bad thing's going to happen. I just want to put a word out to anybody who's at Google. Voice is hellaciously useful. Even if Alex doesn't want to use it, I want to use it.
Within Hangouts, you can toggle to voice. And in fact, I did that yesterday with my Fitbit as I was walking through town. You do have to turn the, within Hangouts, you have to hit the no video thing, right? Which is, it's not quite a hack and it's fine. But what that is just toggling everything over to voice. And then all of a sudden, voice really improves. So it's a user interface thing that Google obviously does to push you into video, but it's just as effective to send voice.
Yeah, no, it is. It just, as I said, I just think that for me, I use it so often, and if it was there, I would never call anyone in my company again. I would be just constantly using that, as the phone. I wouldn't. That would be it. That's the issue. And what I love about Hangouts in general is for instance, is that I can have text conversations, video conversations, and I can do it on my laptop, on my iPad, on my iPhone. All of those are continuous between any of those, and I don't have to think about it, and it's just a much better solution. And my disclaimer, of course, is that we do 300 Hangouts a year, and a lot of them are for Google. Just to make sure I say that. But
the good news
but we
is
like it a lot.
It's been somewhat transparent, this move from voice to Hangouts. So far, so good. I know I use Hangouts all the time. I make calls with Hangouts all the time.
And you have WhatsApp if you want to.
Right. Well, and
they're going to add phone, by the way.
I know, but the problem with WhatsApp is it's attached to one of my phone numbers, and I want it attached to all of my phone numbers. That's the problem with I use WhatsApp because I have a lot of our partners in South America and Africa use it. So to contact them, I'm using WhatsApp. But the problem is it limits me to one device.
Pono got funded. I just like saying that. Pono got funded.
By everybody.
6 million to the tune of 6 million. Pono is Neil Young's high bit rate. Yes, high bit rate. Of course I am. Music player. It looks like a kind of like a triangular iPod. And I ordered one for $400. Kickstarter has now closed. They were asking for $800,000. They raised $6.2 million. There's some question, however, over whether this is snake oil, because the premise is that even uncompressed CD quality audio, 44.1 thousand kilohertz, 44.1 thousand.
But they're not only 44.1; they're doing much higher than that, aren't they?
Well, this is CD is and 16-bit resolution is not enough.
It isn't.
That you're losing music.
You are.
And golden-eared people. I talked to Joe Walsh. He was on Ham Nation a little while ago. And I said, what do you record at? Record master at? He said 44.1, 24-bit. He said anything more, anything with a higher sample rate, just the file size gets too big.
Well, so the only thing I will say is I recorded. Well, no. Well, so for recording, the acquisition medium, I think that's crazy, to be honest with you. I mean, I love recording.
If we're doing
well, yeah. And the thing is that when you record, like I had one where I accidentally recorded 40 dB off. but I recorded it at 192. And when I scaled it up,
information,
there was enough information there that it sounded just fine. Yeah. You know, now the.
So you recorded. Well, what do you prefer to record at?
Well, for voice stuff, I'm still doing 44.1. If we're doing music, I record at 192.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? So
this
it's,
player will play 192,000 hertz by 24 bits. That is very, a lot of detail.
The big thing is what you're committing to in that player, though, is an entirely different scale of headphone and infrastructure.
It's got a very good quality DAC.
You will not hear it. But you definitely can hear it at 44.1. What I will say is at 44.1, you can definitely hear it. And where you hear it is when the song's ending, in the high tones, in the you'll hear quantization. You know, so it's basically when you see blocking,
So
on
this is
YouTube,
not golden. Like this is not music. A golden ears product. This is going to be something that people are going to be happy they bought.
I think the people who are buying it are definitely going to be people who can hear that and are willing to invest. If you take your little earphones that are
you're not going to want to put your iPod headphones in this, of course.
The commitment is you're not going to spend less than $300 to $500 on headphones and hear any difference.
Right.
So that's the other thing to remember is that you're buying this, but you're also going to have to invest in headphones that can hear it. And really, the ones you're really going to hear it on are these really expensive open air ones that are $1,000 to $2,000 each. You definitely are going to hear the difference. But that's what you're. But
even
this is,
if it's
people,
only because you spent so much money,
that no, people spend. You can definitely
think
hear
you
it.
Hear a difference.
Oh no, you can. I mean, I don't know. I used to be a stereophile a long time.
By the
ago,
way, these will
I
not be
did
compressed.
Did not have the money to continue.
These will be they'll be compressed, but with lossless compression. They'll be stored in FLAC. No DRM, which I like. That's brave of the music industry, the companies that will make albums available. And master quality albums available with no copy protection are really saying we trust you.
Well, I mean, I think DRM is
it's dead
for music. I think it's been
dead.
You know, it's that's over.
So I'm happy. Look forward to this.
They come with a 2-inch tape deck.
That would be awesome.
Reel to reel, man.
Sweet.
32 RPM.
And sunglasses.
I did that in Katati. I cut the Prairie Sun. I cut 2-inch tape with razors.
Was it 8-track?
I didn't do.
It was a bajillion.
A bajillion track?
Oh, Jesus. A bajillion track, yeah.
Mine was only quarter inch.
It's not 8-track.
I'm really glad that I was in radio long enough to have to cut a quarter inch tape where a crossfade was 45 degrees and a cut was 90 degrees. And that was. It was good times.
Mm-hmm. Bloody fingers, man.
So Jill, they're talking about this idea that. You used to have to record on a magnetic medium that span really fast.
Cutting to the beat. Wait.
Fast.
Cutting to the beat was like this.
and then
carts. Do you guys remember carts?
Carts.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
We're all radio guys. I apologize, Jill.
Sorry.
But yeah, you used a every radio station. They had a little template that you would cut aluminum block. You'd cut on. They have razor blades all over the place. Very handy when you wanted Coke. You had the razor blade, and
you had a good excuse to have it.
And then, we used a grease pencil, so you'd mark it.
Yeah, right.
And you'd slice it with a grease pencil. Look at that!
There it is,
ladies and gentlemen.
My God. I just want to touch it. I haven't touched it.
Oh,
you know, all your really commercials sad. On your commercials would all be on carts. And
music
you just pop
too,
the carts
in some crap stations like the ones I worked at. These were basically 8 tracks, except they only had 1 track, and they had a Q tone at the beginning, so they would always
cue up back to it. You'd slam it in, push play.
Bam, boom.
Satisfying.
You know what's really
funny?
That's
how you got your listeners, too. So if you had them call in, you'd slam one of those and hit record and talk to them on the phone and make fun of them and then put it back in and play it for everybody.
This is the real deal. This is a Fidelipad.
That is so awesome.
MasterCart.
I miss those days.
A lot of radio stations ran out of these. It's sad because it gets in your head, and I think this means I have Alzheimer's. But I can remember the cart numbers of songs, like Kenny Rogers' The Gambler, 1938. That was the number you'd have to file it.
Act One Lemon Seed Service was 134.
You remember, too?
Yeah. Wow. Because you grab it all the time. And
you know, I always
look around.
The Gambler. I'd always get that one. Yep. You got to know when to hold them. Know when to fold them. I did mention maglev, so let's mention briefly the Popular Science article. The company in Japan that owns the rights to maglev trains says, we will give the technology to the United States for free. J.R. Tokay says it will not charge the U.S. to license proprietary maglev technology. It allows the trains to hover 4 inches above tracks and travel at speeds of 310 miles an hour. This will never fly in the U.S.
We're really missing out, too.
I know.
We barely have trains as it is.
Have you ever ridden on a maglev?
No.
I don't know if it's in a maglev. I take...
Like a bullet
when
train?
When we do work in Tokyo, we always go up to outside of Nagano. And there's a high-speed train. I don't know if it's a maglev, but it's a really fast... It's probably 180, 200 miles an hour. And it is awesome. And every time I'm on it, I'm just like, oh, I cannot believe that we don't have these. I mean, it's so, you know, people are bringing little things to eat. And I take Amtrak all the time up between D.C. and New York.
That's the plan. If they want to build a 300-mile-an-hour train from New York to D.C., it would make the trip in 40 minutes. I'm sorry, in an hour.
Because Acela right now is like 2 hours and 45 minutes, I think, from D.C. to New York.
That's the Acela. That's the Acela. Regular Amtrak is still close to 4 hours.
But, you know, I took an Acela once, and because the tracks are so crappy, half the time it's going slow. You can't go fast.
But it's still 2 hours and 45 minutes. Save that extra hour and 15. Go ahead.
Yeah, the infrastructure is terrible. They're running in the same infrastructure and the same routes, so there are traffic issues, and there are, you know, it becomes very narrow and... terrible infrastructure.
So Amtrak right now is trying to fix up Union Station in Washington, D.C.
And rather than spend
you know what the bill for that is? $7.5 billion.
I'd spend more money on the tracks. The station there is fine.
Who cares?
It's fine.
It could be a nice dumpy station. Let's get good tracks.
Got to keep the birds out of it.
It's expensive to build maglevs, but at least we won't have to pay licensing fees. And True Blood is true. This is actually a very big story. Artificial blood, Welcome Trust funded stem cell research has produced red blood cells fit for transfusion, paving the way for mass production of artificial bloods in factories. This is in the UK. That's why it's got a strange name. Welcome Trust. Limitless supply of type O blood, free of disease, compatible with all patients. Currently, it costs about £120 to transfuse a single unit of blood. If you could actually manufacture blood using this technique, it would be a lot cheaper. So this is very exciting news. This could be a big breakthrough. And it means the vampires, you can come out of the closet. Come on now, guys. It's okay. We got blood for you. All right, I think I'm going to wrap it up after that bad joke. I have no reason to go on. Anything else? No, I'm just looking. Hey, Jill, I want to thank you for coming all the way out here.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Next time, Dan, you got to come all the way out here. We'll get all our New Yorkers to come out. It's really nice to have you. Dan Patterson, what are you working on next? What's danpatterson.com, of course.
Yeah, so, I just got back from this trip from Cairo where we spent several weeks training Sudanese human rights activists how to use mobile devices and encryption, security, and such, and storytelling tactics on Android devices. So what's next is managing the content that comes out of places like Darfur, Kordofan, Port Sudan, very interesting places within Sudan. And then after that, I might have just been cast on a reality show.
What?
Yeah, we'll see.
About what? Gross. Silicon Alley?
Oh, it's a I can't, you know, that is my next. We'll see. I have not signed anything, but it involves desert islands and being and surviving. So
no.
Oh my god.
No.
We'll see.
I'm rooting for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. So. Well, good luck. When will you know?
I know now. We're just talking about timing and money. And
do they pay you to do stuff like that?
Well, they do. How much? Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, so you're negotiating that.
Yeah. We're chattering.
Do you say things like, "I will not eat bugs"?
Yeah, that's what we're actually talking about. Like, I won't do anything that's embarrassing to my friends, family, colleagues, you know, right. Career.
And you're allowed to stipulate that, or is that something they fight you over? No, we want you to embarrass your friends and family.
Nobody's pushed back yet. But safety is...
Let me just ask one question.
Number two in the list.
Are you going to be naked in this show?
No, I will not do a show.
No nudity. Okay, because there is one.
That is the craziest. That is the craziest.
I'm tuning around on the dial. I immediately erase the channel. It's Discovery Channel. That's it. You're dead.
Yeah, right.
Naked and afraid. It's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And they cover up the naughty bits. So, like, what's the point? It's like, you know they're naked, but you can't see that they're naked. I don't understand it. Is there a Naked and Afraid subscription model where they don't cover up the naughty bits?
Let's hope not.
Truthfully, the people they got, I don't want to see the naughty bits.
Isn't that always the case?
But, Dan, now, do you have tattoos? Anything you want to tell us about here? Anything?
Yeah, I'm covered. Covered in the ink. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah. Sleeved on both sides.
Sleeved and clean.
So that's exciting. How do you get... Do you have an agent that shops you around?
You know, this has been in progress for about a year, so it's... No, not yet, and I honestly hope it doesn't come down to that. I love the life I live covering geeky stuff.
Oh, so you feel like you have mixed feelings about agreeing to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to do this, and it sounds like it could be very interesting. But again, I love the life I live, and I love what I get to do. If they want to do a reality show about a guy who goes to Africa and covers stuff, I'm all in for that
show. Yeah, but they don't.
Right. I mean, it's like you just said with this other show, you know, I'm not going to do anything that will embarrass my friends or family or be professionally limiting. So we'll see. Brushwood show. Now that is cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Did he get renewed? Do we know yet? I know there were.
I don't know yet.
They're trying to get him renewed.
Sometimes he is naked and afraid.
I'm not sure.
Jill Duffy, great to have you. Where can we find your work? PC Magazine, I guess. Yes.
PCMag.com/get-organized. I have a new Get Organized e-Kindle single coming out next month about travel. So if you are a disorganized travel person, don't know what sites to use to
book
your stuff, don't know how to plan, don't know how to budget, Kindle single coming out next month.
I'm glad you told me this at the end of the show because I would have been very nervous sitting next to you because I'm so disorganized. And I feel like you're judging me right now.
I'm not judging. I'm here to help. You know, I wrote this book. Lot of love, and it's really to help people not to shame them about their messy digital lives.
Wine note taking for beginners. This
I'm
is good.
I'm very interested in that.
Yeah.
Oh, I talked to some great people.
I haven't figured out how to do that well.
The executive editor of Wine Spectator
great,
spoke to me for
great
that, and he
place.
Told me a whole bunch of stuff I never would have thought of on my own.
I use Corks, CORKZ, and CellarTracker.com. Highly recommend CellarTracker.com. You have a database of all your wines. They tell you it's time to drink.
Does any of them let you like take a picture of the the wine glass?
Yeah.
Well, the label. You want the label.
That's what I want. I want to take a picture of the
Vino
of the thing and then have it
yeah
automatically tell me what the Wine Spectator
yeah
is.
Most of them do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I tried maybe too long ago and then gave up.
Yeah.
They didn't. I was like, it's not going to be useful until I can walk into the store, take pictures, because it drives me crazy when they don't give me the ratings because I'm not very smart.
You need professional.
None of them are perfect. None of them are perfect, frankly. They don't do a great job. But hey, at least you can do it.
Yeah.
Well, good. And the book is going to be out when? Soon?
Next month.
Middle
of May, yeah.
And we'll come back and you can plug it then. Amazon single kind of thing? Or
yeah, Kindle single.
Kindle single. 99 cents.
$2.99,
$2.99 now.
I think that's what we're going for, yeah.
All right.
It's high quality stuff.
All right. Okay. I was friends with the old editor-in-chief of Wine Spectator, as a matter of fact. I used to do a cooking show with him. Of all things. Harvey, can't remember his last name. Alex Lindsay, anything you want to plug? Everything you do is top secret.
I'm going to be doing more of these kind of flash ask Alex's if you want to.
Good.
Just as we keep on experimenting with this question system, I think the question system went really well.
Yeah, did we get any? I didn't ask you enough about.
So we had about 300 people using it, which was
Harvey Steinman.
I really appreciate everybody who was willing to be part of our little experiment. We've been doing lots of little ones, and we were like, "Well, can it really handle a large audience?" And so, and I think that we got a lot of great suggestions, and so I'll be keep on, you know, as we keep on developing it, I'll. Keep on doing some Ask Alex's, and you'll probably see more of that. So if you follow me on Twitter, which is just Alex Lindsay, or Google+, follow the one with my picture. There's one without my picture. That is my account, but I don't use it. So
any last questions from our...
Last one that was particularly highly voted was from Will D. in Washington, D.C. He said, should software companies stop supporting older versions if the upgrade is free?
Should older if the upgrade? Then not like Windows 8.1 update.
So they say if we're going to upgrade it for free, should we keep
on? You know why? Because not everybody wants to upgrade. There are reasons not to update. In fact, if you're using Windows 8 in business, it has not yet been vetted for update 1. So
I don't even have Mavericks yet. Because it broke some of our hardware.
Mavericks is free.
It broke some of our hardware.
Yep. So yes, they should be required to support it. Because not everybody can upgrade, even if it's free. It's not that it costs money. It's... Not everybody can organize. When was Get Organized Day? How did I miss that?
Get Organized Day. That was Free Cone Day.
Free Cone Day. Leave no hand unconed.
My favorite day. Ben and Jerry's gives out free scoops once a year.
Yeah.
That's my favorite day.
See, if you're really organized, you don't miss stuff like that. That was April 8th, and I missed it. Man, I got to start reading your column. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do Twit Sunday afternoons, even on holidays like Easter at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Watch live. You can ask questions. I think we should keep using that.
Sure.
I think it's a slow start this time because we'd never used it before. We didn't tell anybody ahead of time.
Right.
But can we keep using it?
Absolutely.
Because I like the idea of being able to take questions.
Yeah. So
we'll figure out how to integrate it into the flow of the show.
Yep.
And that's why you want to watch live because we like that interaction. But if you can't watch live, of course, we make on-demand audio available and video too. After the fact, on our website, twit.tv, and wherever they aggregate netcasts like iTunes and the Xbox Music Store and Dog Catcher and Instacast and Pocket Cast and all. There's a lot of cast apps now. Thanks for being here. Did I do everything, Chad? Did I thank you, Chad Johnson?
Sure.
Underpaid employee, Chad Johnson? Didn't you just get a raise? Am I wrong?
I didn't hear of that.
Well, I'll go talk to Lisa and we'll get you a raise.
Yeah. I think you spilled the beans. I think it was going to be a surprise.
It was for an Easter surprise.
Right.
I hid it in an egg somewhere in the backyard. Go look for it. Thank you, Chad. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can. Happy Easter, everybody. There's a little tradition going on here in the studio of applauding after shows. And really, really, it's too much. No, please. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.